Honourable Members, before I give an opportunity for African Mutsekga to also give an introduction, I just want to keep the context of our meeting today. Maybe go to the Constitution, Chapter 4, Section 42.3. The National Assembly is elected to represent the people and to ensure governed by the people under the Constitution. It does this by choosing the President, by providing a national forum for public consideration of issues, by passing legislation, and by scrutinizing and overseeing executive action. So that's going to be our focus today, scrutinizing and overseeing executive action. Then, colleagues, again, in terms of the rules of the ninth edition, the rules of the National Assembly, Rule 227, a portfolio committee must maintain oversight of the exercise within its portfolio of national executive authority, including the implementation of legislation. Any executive organ of state falling within its portfolio, any constitutional institution falling within its portfolio, and any other body or institution in respect of which oversight was assigned to it. And then C, may monitor, investigate, inquire into, and make recommendations concerning any such executive organ of state, constitutional institution, or other body of institution, including the legislative program, budget, rationalization, restructuring, functioning, organization, structure, staff, and policies of such organ of state, institution, or other body or institution, and they may consult and liaise with any executive organ of state or constitutional institution. Now, colleagues, last week the Portfolio Committee on Police met with the DPCI, and we received a briefing on various issues, including high-profile investigations. And it came to the fore that there's certain challenges that is experienced in terms of the processing and prosecuting of certain cases relating to the state capture matters. So the purpose is really today, after consultations with myself and Dr. Mutsekga, to have a joint meeting and to determine what is those specific stumbling blocks and what can be done to deal with them effectively, and also given opportunity for members to do the interrogation. Maybe also the context is to indicate that the governing legislation of the DPCI and the NPA provides for a multidisciplinary approach in priority crime investigations. The SAPS Act 1995 states the need to ensure that the directorate, that's now the DPCI, implements, where appropriate, a multidisciplinary approach and an integrated methodology involving the cooperation of all relevant government departments and institutions, notably the NPA, and then the NPA Act 1998, Act 32 of 1998, provides for investigating directorates, which is a special unit established by the NPA on request of the DPCI to conduct investigations into serious and complex offences. Maybe just the last issue that also links to this is what is said in the National Development Plan in Chapter 12, that the criminal justice system is to have a single set of objectives, priorities, and performance measure targets. And then it relates also to the seven-point plan. And then it says that on page 388, inspiring public confidence in the criminal justice system is necessary to prevent crime and increase levels of safety. Public confidence is eroded by perceptions that criminals escape the law, that arrests do not lead to convictions, or that prisoners escape easily from courtrooms or correctional facilities. The most effective deterrent to criminality is an efficient and effective criminal justice system. And that is on paragraph 2, page 388 of the NDP. Then on page 389, departments in the justice and crime prevention system have been reporting on the implementation of the single-point plan. However, the country needs greater systemic and institutional coherence among these departments. To succeed, it must be well-coordinated, with dedicated budgets and implementation involving all departments in the plan. So that is the starting call from the National Development Plan for better coordination and focus in terms of the specific area. So I'm going to give an opportunity now to Dr. Mutsekga, and then we'll give an opportunity for the honourable members to introduce themselves and also the various delegations. Chairperson.
Our chair, let me just say that the politicians come and go. As the members of the institution are professional people that stay regardless of the change of the politicians, and that's why they are also governed by law, and the law says that they must act without fear or favor, because they don't serve incumbent politicians, they serve the country and the people. This morning I just got an SMS from a former prosecutor who is now a member of the Johannesburg Chamber of Advocates, who says that he doesn't know. He knows that if there is a prima facie case after investigation, the police must arrest, they must prosecute. They don't need any permission from anybody. So that underpins the independence of the law enforcement officials in doing their work. And therefore, as the Justice Committee, we were concerned to hear that there could be a stumbling block in doing the work resulting from interdepartmental relations. So our interest in this matter is to hear, do such stumbling blocks really exist? If they exist, where do they arise from? And we are here to assist, to make sure that they are removed with immediate effect, so that the law can take its course without fear and favor. And otherwise, I associate myself with the opening remarks of my co-chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Dr. Motsenga. I'm going to then ask the honorable members of the two committees to introduce themselves. We will start on that side again.
Goedemorgen, dames en heren. Mijn naam is Engie Moliwazi. Ik is lid van die politiecomité en ik dank u.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Phindile Mola, a member of the Portfolio Committee of Police. Thank you.
Good morning, coaches. Morning, colleagues. And morning to all. I'm Moremadi Motapo from Limpopo Province, a member of Justice and Correctional Services Portfolio Committee. Thank you.
Good morning, my name is Leonard Ramatakani, member of the Police Portfolio Committee.
Morning, I'm Werner Horn, member of the Justice and Correctional Services Portfolio Committee.
Good morning, I'm Glenis Breckenberg, and I'm a member of the Justice Portfolio Committee.
I'm Diane Kerler Barnard of the Police Portfolio Committee.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, I'm Zakele Mbele, member of the Police Committee.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Tiriwari Murawuzi. I'm a member of Portfolio Committee of Justice and Correctional.
Good morning. My name is Jerome Marke, a member of the Police Portfolio Committee.
Thank you, members. We will then ask Advocate Abrams to introduce his delegation.
Good morning, chairpersons of the two respective portfolio committees, members of the committee, members of the media that are present, and of course, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Sean Abrams. I'm the National Director of Public Prosecution. Present with me today is Advocate Sibongile Mzinyati, who is the head of the National Prosecuting Services. Next to him is Advocate Marlon Govender, who is the head of the Specialized Commercial Crime Unit in the National Crossing Authority. And of course, my spokesperson and advisor, Advocate Lebuyo Mfaku. Thank you.
Advocate Abrams, then General Makakata of the DBCI.
Thank you, Chair. Morning to both chairpersons and to the honorable members and to all colleagues. I'm Yolisa Matagata, Lieutenant General in the Police, but as the acting national head of the DBCI. Behind me, I have Brigadier Mlaudi, who is the spokesperson of the DBCI. Next to him is Brigadier Bukaba. She is responsible for private crime specialized investigation. Next to her is Brigadier Basi, who is also acting as the component head for anti-corruption investigations. And then we have Colonel Stein, who is our parliamentary liaison person. Thank you, Justice.
Thank you very much. I see also a former head of the NPA, Advocate Picoli, here, and I see also a member of the Human Rights Commission, so also welcome to the Chapter 9 institutions at this very important meeting. Without further ado, I think our approach, Chairperson, is going to be, we're not interested in long overhead projection or long briefings. We want to go straight to the point, and then we'll allow members to deal with the issues at hand. So, NDPP Director, the question is, in terms of the state capture investigations that took place, according to the briefing that we received from the DPCI last week, they were ready in November. They were also ready to proceed with execution of warrants, but the matter has been delayed for more than 4 months. So what is the stumbling blocks? But also the bigger picture in terms of cooperation, decisions on priority crime matters that is delayed sometimes 2 years, 5 years. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. It of course would require me to go into some degree of detail. Let us first thank the chairpersons of the respective committees for inviting the National Prosecuting Authority to brief the two committees on progress and challenges regarding the prosecution of state of capture matters. Today's briefing is of course occasioned by aspects which arose during a briefing by the acting head of the Directorate for Priority Crimes Investigations, General Matakata, on 28 February to the Portfolio Committee on Police in response to questions which arose around the state of capture investigation, particularly around the investigations, the subsequent arrest, and appearance before court of accused in the Estina matter. General Matakata, inter alia, informed this committee that the DPCI concluded their investigation into the Estina matter in November 2017, after which the docket was submitted to the National Prosecuting Authority, with the DPCI having to wait for the NPA to make a decision as to whether or not any person or persons should be prosecuted. Further, that the DPCI were only given a go-ahead by the NGA team of prosecutors in February 2018, which resulted in the arrest. That General Matakata did not know why it took so long for the NPA to finalize the charges. That the DPCI expressed its concern that matters were dragging. That General Matakata purportedly took this up with both the former Minister of Police and myself. That the NPA, in effect, hindered the work of the DPCI in not taking the matter to court expeditiously. That there are cases where the docket has been at the NPA for a year, in some instances, for the NPA to take a decision. Before responding to these issues raised by General Matakata during that briefing, we deem it necessary and prudent to first provide some general feedback in relation to the state of capture investigation. During our appearance before SCOPA on the 23rd of May 2017, and again during our briefing to the Justice and Correctional Services Portfolio Committee in September and October last year, we inter alia briefed the committee on the following: that the state of capture report was referred to both my office and to the head of the DPCI by the new public protector that an analysis of the state of capture report warranted a criminal investigation, as the information contained in the report was understandably at the time insufficient to make any pronouncement thereon. That I subsequently consulted with the national head of the National Prosecuting Services and with the head of the SECU, and I constituted a team of experienced prosecutors under the leadership of the head of the SECU, Advocate Marlene Govender, to provide the requisite guidance to the DPCI investigators under the auspices of prosecutor-guided investigation. Further, that a team of asset forfeiture specialists were added under the leadership of the head of operations at the asset forfeiture unit, Advocate Knox Molele. That the investigation was subsequently divided into seven legs. The first leg was the Mentor investigation. The second leg was the Jonas investigation. The third leg related to a complaint in respect of the government communications information system and the New Age contract investigation. The fourth leg related to Eskom and Tegeta. The fifth related to Transnet and Trillion. The sixth leg related to the Danao VR laser investigation. And the seventh leg was the Public Protector Act offences against Colin Mahini and the former president, which required a degree of investigation. Of course, numerous engagements had taken place between the NPA prosecutors and the DPCI investigators. I further, of course, these investigations are still ongoing, and these negotiations and engagements between the two units and structures are still ongoing. I further advised at the time that the Estina matter had become the eighth leg of the investigation, and that there was a team of prosecutors and asset forfeiture specialists that were working on this matter as well. We assured the respective committees that work was being done on all these matters, which work is continuing to this very day. We also informed the Justice and Correctional Services Portfolio Committee that we were not in a position at the time to comment on whether or not anyone would be charged, as that was for the decision makers when the investigations were concluded. We further advised the Justice and Correctional Services Portfolio Committee that we could not inform the committee whether there would be any asset confiscation and or preservation application, and if so, when they will take place, as publicly disclosing this in itself was undesirable and creates challenges ordinarily in ex parte applications and would cause unnecessary time delays. On the 26th of August 2017, I was formally briefed by Advocate Governor, the head of the SECU, and of course Knox Molele, the operational head of the Asset Forfeiture Unit, on the strategy to be adopted to deal with the management of the potential flight risks the suspects they had identified presented. Further, the asset forfeiture processes, and of course, importantly, the prosecution strategy. In the space of approximately 7 months, the joint prosecuting and investigating team has inter alia done the following. I beg your pardon. The joint teams engaged in no less than 24 formal meetings. They received 90 dockets or inquiries relating to various allegations. They received 7 forensic or investigative reports commissioned by National Treasury or civil society organizations. They issued 373 Section 205 subpoenas. They drafted and submitted requests for mutual legal assistance to 8 countries and directly engaged with prosecuting authorities in 7 of these countries. The work of the team must be viewed against the fact that cases of this nature are extremely complex and, like the arms deal prosecution, may take several years to investigate and to prosecute on a running court roll. The asset forfeiture conducted preliminary assessments of the various reported matters and incidences. They identified 17 cases with asset forfeiture potential to the collective value of 50 billion rand. Of course, these are to be dealt with in terms of Chapter 5 and Chapter 6 of the Prevention of Organized Crime Act. To date, the Asset Forfeiture Unit has obtained two preservation orders, an amount of 1.6 billion rand in respect of the McKinsey and Trillion Agreement, and 228 million rand in respect of the Estina matters. Of course, there are a number of other matters that are in the process of being finalized, so we can expect these applications to be brought within weeks. In fact, some of them should have been brought already. I want to speak about the Estina matter. The Estina leg was prioritized and was first referred to the National Prosecuting Authority on the 18th of August last year. In the space of the past 7 months, the NPA team of asset forfeiture unit specialists and the prosecutors were able to ensure that the investigations by the DPCI were fast-tracked so that a preservation application could be brought, that search and seizure operations could be embarked upon, and arrest of some of the accused could be effected. The investigations are far advanced, with search and seizures having been conducted and the arrests having been effected against three government officials, the director of Estina, and three directors of companies that received the proceeds of crime. The latter companies and directors were charged with offences of theft, money laundering, and contravention of the Companies Act. There, however, remain a few outstanding aspects. It is for this reason that the matter has been postponed to the 17th of August 2018 for further investigation. I want to deal with the responses to the issues raised by the acting head of the DPCI. After General Matakata's appearance before the Portfolio Committee on Police last week, I requested a comprehensive report and briefing from Advocate Govender on the Estina matter and on the remarks made by General Matakata to the Portfolio Committee on Police, insofar as it relates to the NPA. On Monday, 5 February, I was provided with a report on a factual account on the NPA's engagement with the DPCI based on inter alia notes kept by the head of the SCCU in her office file, reports received, email correspondence, entries in the investigation diary of the police docket, and briefings by the prosecuting and investigating teams. I do not intend to traverse all the engagements and interactions between the NPA and the DPCI in relation to all state of capture investigations and the Estina matter, but only that which I deem is relevant for today's briefing. Now, General Matakata and I have always enjoyed a very collegial and professional working relationship from the commencement of her stint as head of the DPCI. Of course, we would telephonically communicate with each other at any time convenient to the both of us, and we would meet regularly on various issues impacting on our respective institutional, legal and constitutional responsibilities, even after hours and on weekends, a relationship that we still share and which I have no doubt will continue going forward. It is regrettable that General Matakata made some of the utterances to the Portfolio Committee on Police insofar as it relates to the NPA, as I believe and have been advised that she had been incorrectly informed and or advised. I also believe that the issues raised by General Matakata could easily have been resolved outside of the public fora directly between the two of us. This misinformation has incorrectly given the perception that the NPA and the DPCI and or the prosecuting team and the investigating team and or General Matakata and I are at loggerheads. This, I assure you, is entirely incorrect. We nevertheless dispute to the fullest the utterances made by General Matakata to the Portfolio Committee on Police on 28 February 2018, specifically insofar as it relates to the NPA. During the evening of 22 May 2017, General Matakata and I, whilst participating in another engagement, took the opportunity to also discuss the state of capture investigation. In this regard, we discussed consolidating all the matters under one investigating team. At the time, I had already constituted a prosecuting team. And of course, that all the state of capture related investigations be subsequently submitted to the prosecuting team to provide the requisite guidance under the prosecutor guided investigation methodology. This was agreed upon. At the time, some of the matters were being investigated by the DPCI's serious economic offences. I pause to state I think that that is what they are titled, and some by the anti-corruption task team. By July 2017, all the matters had not been forwarded to the NPA as yet. Avikram Zanyati, who is present today, the Deputy National Director of Public Prosecutions and Head of the National Prosecuting Services, to whom the head of the SECU reports, wrote to General Matakata on 7 July requesting the General's assistance in facilitating the referral of all matters relating to the state of capture allegations to the NPA. On the 2nd of August, Advocate Governor called a General Mononoke of the DPCI to inquire about the docket in the Estina matter. This was followed up by a meeting dated 3 August 2017. On the 8th of August, a meeting was held with two members of the DPCI investigation team and the NPA's head of the SECU and the head of operations of the asset forfeiture unit, where assistance was rendered in the signing of subpoenas in terms of Section 205 of the Criminal Procedure Act. On the 18th of August, the self-same members of the DPCI provided the docket to the NPA in respect of the Estina matter and two other related matters. At that stage, the A-clip of the docket, which ordinarily contains police witness statements and evidence, only went up to A5. On the 21st of August 2017, the NPA obtained National Treasury's reports in respect of the Estina matter and another matter, which I don't need the necessary to mention to this committee today, which reports were provided to both the investigating team and the prosecuting team. On the 25th of August, the DPCI investigating team met with the NPA prosecuting and asset forfeiture team. At that stage already, Advocate Governor alerted the joint team of ensuring that their activities canvassed the flight risks that potential suspects presented. Advocate Governor further requested the joint team to fast-track the investigation and for a draft charge sheet to be available by November 2017. The team, however, expressed grave reservations about this being achievable in the light of the nature and the complexity of the investigation and the case. On Saturday, 26 August, I was briefed by the prosecuting and asset forfeiture unit teams on their strategies to preserve assets and to have matters enrolled expeditiously and to manage any potential flight risks. I was deeply concerned about the progress of the investigation into this matter and a number of other investigations, and had previously made specific recommendations to General Matakata during one of our many one-on-one engagements. I thus deemed it prudent to write to General Matakata on 1 September 2017, in which communication I inter alia conveyed the following: that I was deeply concerned about the lack of significant progress with investigations in respect of some very topical, high-profile, serious alleged corruption, fraud, and financial mismanagement matters, some of which had previously been discussed between the two of us. I implored on General Matakata to assign additional resources and investigators to these matters. I advised that I was of the respectful view, with which General Matakata was in agreement, that serious consideration be given to invoking the provisions of Section 17, capital D, subsection 3 of the South African Police Service Act in some of these matters by requesting me to appoint a director of public prosecutions or a special director as an investigating director to fast track some of these investigations. Further, that in the event that this is done, I'll provide a favorable response thereto. I further alluded, General Matakata, to the provisions of Section 17, capital J, subsection 1A of the South African Police Service Act, which provides for the establishment of an operational committee to be comprised of inter alia the head of the DPCI as chairperson, the head of the crime intelligence unit of the police, the national director of public prosecutions, the directors general of finance, justice and constitutional development, state security, home affairs, the head of the financial intelligence center, and any other person the operational committee may require as determined by that committee. Subsection 2A of the SAPS Act obligates the operational committee to review, monitor, and facilitate the support and assistance by respective government departments and institutions to the DPCI, including the secondment of personnel to the DPCI, and to address problems that arise in respect of the rendering of such support and assistance to the DPCI. I apologize. Further, that since the DPCI is dedicated to prevent, investigate, and combat national priority offences, in particular serious organised and transnational crime, serious commercial crime and corruption, it requires the close cooperation of key stakeholders in the justice, crime prevention, and security cluster. That notwithstanding the fact that the DPCI came into operation many years ago, the envisaged operational committee is yet to be established, and that I was confident that the establishment of the operational committee soonest would significantly impact positively on our collective endeavors and efforts to combat the scourge of the various serious crime typologies that have impacted negatively on our economy, the safety and security of our citizens, and the safety and security of our borders. I've raised this concern with General Matakata by way of illustration, in that my concern was particularly highlighted at the time by the challenges we faced in combating money laundering, illicit financial flows, and terror financing by the non-establishment of a counter-money laundering advisory council, which was a statutory requirement in terms of the Financial Intelligence Center Act, where it came into operation on 1 February 2002. The council, to be constituted by many of the same persons who would constitute the DPCI Operational Committee, was obligated to advise the Minister of Finance on policies and best practices in identifying the proceeds of unlawful activities and in combating money laundering. It was further obligated to advise the Minister of Finance on the powers entrusted to the Minister in terms of that Act, and to advise the Financial Intelligence Centre on the performance of its function. Despite the significant importance of having to establish this council, various ministers of finance at the time did not deem it necessary to give effect to the statutory requirement. I further advised that these decisions had adverse consequences in the Republic's ability to combat money laundering, terror financing, and illicit financial flows, and that the FIC Act was amended earlier in 2017, with one of the most notable changes affected being the abolishment of the entire chapter providing for the counter-money laundering advisory council. I hence caution against a similar position than that which abolished the counter-money laundering advisory council. The asset forfeiture unit and the SCCU team were from the end of September bolstered by the appointment of 7 additional investigators from the DPCI. The police's financial investigations, FAFI, were also allocated 3 additional members. The core team of the investigators remained responsible, but now reported to Colonel Heap, who was assigned as the lead investigator on all these matters. The joint DPCI and NPA teams met again on 13,
27 and 29 September 2017, 16 and 31 October 2017, 8 and 21 November, and again on 7 December before breaking for the festive season. The next meeting was on 18 January 2018. It must be noted that the issues related to bail and identification of suspect is recorded in the case investigation plan of September 2017. On 25 October, the prosecuting team was provided with a copy of the A-clip of the docket. At that stage, the statements and evidence filed in the docket had progressed to 8:35. The prosecuting team, however, noted that the scanned copy of the docket provided was incomplete and requested the investigators to be provided with a docket to physically go through the docket and compare what they had received via scanning. This was, however, only provided to the prosecuting team on 14 November 2017. On 8 November, the head of the SECU was provided with a memorandum and a draft affidavit by Brigadier Basi of the DPCI and Colonel Heap for submission to General Matakata for the NPA's input. Brigadier Basi intimated that if the NPA was in agreement, then warrants of arrest would be issued for the identified suspects. In this regard, Advocate Governor advised Brigadier Basi on how the affidavit should be structured, as the draft omitted canvassing the charges of money laundering and the linkages to clearly establish the prima facie case, which was prerequisite at the time, along with the flight risk information. Advocate Governor further recommended that General Matakata and I be briefed in connection with the arrest of suspects of foreign descent identified as potential flight risk. On 14 November, Brigadier Basi advised Advocate Governor that General Matakata had informed Scopa that the investigation into the Estida matter had been finalized and the docket had been submitted to the NPA for decision. Brigadier Basi and Advocate Governor agreed at the time that the matter was not fully investigated. The prosecuting team further advised that it was not possible for the Estida docket to be submitted for decision, as there was substantial investigation that was still outstanding. A case investigation plan dated 8 November detailing the investigations outstanding was provided to Advocate Governor. The prosecuting team further advised that fast-tracking of the financial investigation was material to proving the theft and money laundering charges against the suspect of foreign descent, in respect of whom there were concerns of being a flight risk, so as to establish the prima facie evidence required. In December 2017, the prosecuting team received a draft financial report from the DPCI. The team raised concern that the report could not be verified against the bank statement in assisting them that a prima facie case had been made out, as it was not a product which could be relied on or presented in court. On 6 December, Advocate Governor met with Brigadier Bukaba and Colonel Heap, where she identified several material deficiencies which the prosecutors correctly observed would preclude SAFE from being used at court. It further presented a challenge in that it did not provide the basis in the memorandum submitted by Brigadier Basi in respect of four suspects of foreign nationality. Brigadier Bukaba undertook to address the shortcomings and to ensure that these were rectified as soon as possible in the new year, as a designated DPCI member had already taken leave for the festive season. On 7 December, during a meeting with the prosecuting team and the DPCI investigators, the prosecuting team advised that they were of the view that a prima facie case could not be made out against the parties identified for the purposes of the theft and money laundering charges from the available evidence, especially without the case flow analysis. Accordingly, no warrants of arrest or affidavits had been prepared by the DPCI investigating team to be submitted to the prosecutors for consideration. This was accepted by all the parties, as it was both rational and reasonable Advocate Govinda once again raised the issue of flight risks, to which she and the DPCI investigators advised that monitoring of the suspect's movements were in place. It was jointly decided by both the prosecutors and investigators that the arrests would be targeted for early in 2018 in light of the fact that all the members were also on leave over that period. The prosecuting team was satisfied that the DPCI had put adequate measures in place to manage the flight risk suspects had presented. An updated case investigation plan, which once again highlighted that the DPCI investigators should work on the bail information, was provided to the DPCI investigators. This was required for the arrests of suspects and for their first appearances. The witness statements and evidence filed in the police docket now went up to A82. On 6 December, I was briefed on the matter, during which briefing I also raised the issue of arrest. I was advised that the prosecutors were not in a position to apply for warrants of arrest against a person of foreign descent. On 11 December, the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services was briefed on the state of capture investigation. On 15 January, Advocate Govinda requested Colonel Heap to provide feedback on the warrants of arrest and affidavits. On the 18th of January, during a case status meeting, the prosecutors were presented with an affidavit and applications for warrants of arrest for the very first time. The prosecuting team once again expressed their discomfort in certifying there was a prima facie case establishing the money laundering and theft charges. Brigadier Bukaba was requested to appoint another senior member to assist so as to fast-track the financial analysis within 2 weeks, as the prosecutors did not want this to impact on the charging of any of the suspects. The prosecutors further advised that the arrest affidavit was deficient, as it did not deal with the flight risk, and they have requested the investigators to address this important issue. Only on 23 January were the prosecutors provided with a copy of the affidavit to be used in the search and seizure operation. On the evening of 24 January, Brigadier Basi, Colonel Heap, and Advocate Govinda briefed General Matakata and myself and Advocate Nzanyati on the search and seizure operation. At no stage during this meeting did General Matakata raise any of the concerns she had raised with the portfolio committee on police a week ago. We were advised the search and seizure operations would not be accompanied by simultaneous arrests, and that any arrests would be effected soon after the search and seizure operation and after the seized evidence had been evaluated. We were further advised that the reasons advanced for the arrest not being effected simultaneously was as a result of the bail information that was still outstanding, along with the financial analysis which was targeted to be completed within the time frame that had been provided, along with additional statements. This meeting was ideal for General Matakata to raise a concern about the delays that she had uttered to the portfolio committee a week ago. It wasn't raised with me. On 25 January 2018, the search warrants were authorized by the magistrate in Bloemfontein and executed the very next day. On 27 January, the investigators obtained statements of beneficiaries, which were investigations that had been identified as being outstanding as far back as September 2017. On 31 January 2018, one of the prosecutors pinned the nature of the amendments required for the affidavit for the application for the warrants of arrest, which was provided to the DPCI the same day. On 6 February 2018, the prosecutors met with the investigators and the financial analysts. The prosecutors, supported by one of the financial analysts, expressed reservations about signing off on the warrant without the financial investigations having been finalized. Advocate Govender obtained a copy of the docket during the evening of 7 February and perused same. It is only thereafter that members of the DPCI were advised that they could effect arrest at any stage where it is clear that a person is a flight risk. There was still a substantial amount of information required to be included in the affidavit. Advocate Governor provided guidance to Brigadier Basi thereon and requested the affidavit to be submitted to her by the Friday so that she may attend to the first appearances of the arrested suspects and accused by the Monday, 12 February. The affidavit was forwarded to Advocate Governor on 11 February 2018. Advocate Governor in turn provided an input via email on 12 February 2018 in which she recorded her concerns about the impact on the case as it relates to potential extradition, and a joint decision was taken to focus on those suspects that the police had traced as being within the borders of the Republic. Brigadier Basi at that stage telephonically advised that some of the suspects had already left the country on or about 12 August 2018. That is approximately a week before the docket had been submitted to the National Prosecuting Authority. On 13 February, members of the prosecuting team met with the investigators and signed off on the warrants of arrest. Advocate Governor suggested that General Matakata and I be briefed on the arrest, but was advised that General Matakata had already been briefed, after which she subsequently briefed me. The arrests were effected the very next day on 14 February 2018 on the persons whom the investigating officers had established were still in the Republic. Brigadier Basi advised that Mr. A.J. Gupta was noted as being in the country when the warrant for his arrest was authorized, and that unfortunately Mr. A.J. Gupta could not be arrested as he purportedly fled while the arrests of others were effected at the Gupta residence in Saxon World. All those arrested appeared in court and were granted bail. The matter has now been postponed to 17 August 2018 for the finalization of the investigation. To answer your question, was the investigation into the Estina matter concluded in November 2017? In other words, was a fully investigated docket submitted to the National Prosecuting Authority in November 2017? The answer is an emphatic no. That much is evident from the facts which are presented today. Was the DPCI only given the go-ahead by the NPA team of prosecutors in February 2018, which resulted in the arrest? That is correct. The investigations were at a stage where a prima facie case had been made out against the individuals who were arrested and against those whom warrants of arrest were obtained. Did the DPCI express its concern that matters were dragging? General Matakata did not raise this with me. In any event, it is clear that the NPA prosecutors did not drag their feet in this matter. Ordinarily, matters of this nature take an extremely long time to investigate, and sometimes even years to prosecute. The docket was only presented to the NPA in August 2017. In less than 7 months, the accused were brought before court. Did General Matakata take this up with both the former Minister of Police and I? I dispute that General Matakata took this up with me. In fact, I was completely surprised by the comments to the portfolio committee on the issues that we have addressed today and were addressed a week ago. Did the NPA hinder the work of the DPCI in not taking the matter to court expeditiously. We dispute this in the strongest sense that the NPA hindered the work of the DPCI in not taking the matter to court expeditiously. Decisions were taken jointly by the NPA prosecuting team and the DPCI investigating team. If the matter was not ripe for enrollment, surely the fault cannot be placed at the door of the National Prosecuting Authority. In other words, if the NPA is not satisfied that there is a prima facie case to enroll the matter, how can it be expected of the prosecutors to do so? Notwithstanding this, nothing precluded nor precludes the DPCI from arresting any suspect in any matter with or without a warrant. This they are aware of. Notwithstanding this, in such a situation, if the prosecution is not satisfied that a prima facie case has been made out, the matter would be removed from the court roll and a suspect and or accused would be released from custody. Are there cases, in some instances, where dockets have been at the NPA for a year for the NPA to take a decision? These have not been brought to my attention. I'm unaware of these, and I invite General Matakata to provide Advocate Nzanyati and I with a list of these cases to enable us to investigate these delays and to take the requisite action. My concluding remarks. It's regrettable that these issues found its way into the public fora prior to being addressed by General Matakata and I. The matter could have and should have been handled differently. We regard the DPCI as one of our critical partners in the fight against serious national and transnational crime, financial crime, maladministration, money laundering, corruption, and organized crime in all its form and manifestation. We look forward to continue working closely with the DPCI and building on the already entrenched professional relationship, goodwill, and generally good relations between the two institutions, and in giving effect to the provision of Section 41, Subsection 1H of the Constitution. We'd like to thank the Joint Committee for inviting the National Prosecuting Authority to provide clarity on the issues which arose during the briefing by the DPCI to the Portfolio Committee on Police a week ago. Thank you.
Thank you, Advocate Abrams, for your presentation. We will now give an opportunity to General Matakata. Yes, Joint Chair.
Perhaps also thank you for the eloquent presentation, and to say that we believe in leveling the playing field. In that regard, I'm just wondering whether you did share your presentation with General Matakata. I see that she's strenuously trying to take notes, and whether it would she would be able to do justice to what you have said. But just as an observation, that I think that in the light of what you said, to say you work together, you should have shared this with her so that she also prepared a response. But anyway, we are where we are. Co-chair, let's afford her an opportunity to respond.
If we could, it's in your field that are referred to as right of replication. I'm correct.
Quite correct, and I accept.
Right, thank you very much. The acting head of the DPCI, General Matakata, will give you also an opportunity to address the committee. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks to the briefing by Advocate Abrams. I think first it has to be clarified, because the presentation started with what was said in the Portfolio Committee on Police by myself, in that the work of the DPCI was hindered by the NPA. And I think this question was asked twice, and I expressly said the work of the DPCI was never hindered by the NPA, but gave context to maybe hindering in that context might be the time delay, if it was perceived like that, there was a time delay of working out from the onset that the docket was provided up until the arrest of the suspect, that there was a hindering in that context of people taken to court, but not necessarily that NPA hindered the work of the DPCI. I just want to correct that, because it seems as if there's that understanding that I indicated that the work of the DPCI was hindered by NPA. I need to emphasize. And also to indicate as well that from the presentation given, it is so that there is a working relationship between the DPCI and the and NPA, with prosecutors that have been allocated. And I did mention that the advocate did indicate and pronounce that there were prosecutors that were dedicated to the state of capture investigation. That is so. And the work has been going on regardless of when the docket was shared with the prosecutors for the first time. That is in August, as he expressly indicated, that the work has been going on, and that work is still continuing, because as indicated, how many legs are there in terms of the work that still needs to be done. But I need to also again reflect and emphasize that from what has been going on and said about, and I think it comes out from the, probably from the presentation, that I have thrown Advocate Sean Abrams under the bus. And I think it is that context that is being misused in the public space that he has been thrown under the bus. And even today, the agenda being given out there is that there's going to be a standoff. And I think if we can really understand that we are mandated both, and I'm also mandated by the Act, the DPCI has to function in a multidisciplinary approach. We have to work with other government institutions, and the DPCI has to work with prosecutors. There's no other way. Well, they must take matters to court. They must prosecute the matters to court. So therefore, I'm not sure if that context is being expressed in the public space from just expressing in the last meeting that the docket was submitted in November. Decisions were taken at some point in the 2018 financial year. Should be perceived as if there's a standoff and there has been a thrown NPCP under the bus. And I don't think that is right, because there's a working relationship that is existing. In terms of the other matters that have been raised and the working relationship that existed regardless of when the docket was submitted, I think it's going to put us in a situation where DPCI will say, we did this, we had these reservations, we submitted the docket and indicated that let us not rather work towards preparing all the charges if we have to go to money laundering or racketeering. Can't we focus on the other charges that we put before, because it's the same issues of some of the suspects would maybe leave the country. The concerns were raised, obviously, in the meeting. But from what has been raised by the NDPP, that there were those discussions between the teams, because remember, these were teams that were working together. And those issues might have been raised in those meetings, and taskings given back to the DPCI investigators and so on. And I think even the last meeting where we were to brief in January, as referred by the NDPP, there was no indication that we have to wait until the financial analysis is correctly is done for us to proceed with money laundering or other charges. But we had agreed that we will go ahead and then have the people arrested after we had agreed even to go to Frede and do a search and seizure operation.
So at that point, there was no need in January at that time when we were busy that there was a complaint that needed to be laid at the time, because we agreed and we briefed that let the team proceed, and therefore people might be arrested and so on, knowing what numbers of people were to be arrested and who all were to be arrested. So it's unfortunate some of these things are articulated and have not been given the opportunity to also prepare. But I again say this shouldn't be seen as we're having a standoff, because we have work to do and we have to continue with the work that must be done. But if at any point, and I agree with the issues that might have been that were raised by the advocate in terms of even the operational committee that has to be established and so on, but I thought this would be an opportunity for us to get clarity, and I think he has given that clarity from the context of the NPA, why it is perceived that this matter was dragged, as if Tibisa had submitted the docket in November. So I would leave it.
Right, thank you for that input. I think it will also be advisable going forward, General, that you give us full response to the written input of Cat Abrams, that we can study at this committee and then also take it further. But I think, John Chairperson, maybe we should direct the question to the members. We'll start on that side and we'll work through. Yeah, I recognize all the members. Thank you very much. Honorable Mulabasi.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you for the briefing. Jerama Takata, you might have not said TPCI work is hindering, I mean your NPA work is hindering your work. But fact of the matter is justice delayed is justice denied. Yes, that one. That is my point. Now, to advocate Abraham, the president of this country in his honor promised the citizens of this country that he's going to deal with corruption. And any action of delaying or procedures or submissions or what can be interpreted as a sabotage to the good work that he mentioned to the citizens of this country. What is your take on that one? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Marke, and then Honorable Mula.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think maybe the problem is we got a blow-by-blow account from the NPA, and the responses wouldn't be from the Hawks wouldn't be as meticulous as that. And I would like to say that if we could get the responses blow by blow from, that would make sense to us. But what I want to say is that we as the Portfolio Committee on do oversight over the DPCI, and we are measuring their performance. And if they don't perform, their performance goes according to the cases that they take to court. That is how we measure them. Meaning that if they don't take any cases to court, they are not doing their job. So understanding it in that context, I think I would like to say maybe your measuring instruments are different. NPA's measuring instruments are different from the hawks. But according to us, as the Portfolio Committee on Police, if they don't take any cases to court, it means they are not doing their job. So it must be understood along those contexts. And I would suggest that you work together even more this time and try and synchronize your performance measurements in such a way that it doesn't give us problems. Thank you, Chairperson.
Mark, Honorable Mula.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your briefing. General Matagata, is it true that Mr. Sean Abrams said you didn't raise this issue of delay? My second question, what measures will you both take in bringing suspects to justice now that they have left the country? My third question, who in the NPA had final authority to make a decision on the matter of issuing the warrant? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, coaches. Once more, one of my colleagues, and thanks for the presentation from both head of National Prosecuting Authority and General Matagata and your team. Former NPA head Advocate Bigoli, good morning, and media and all. Chairperson, although as a Portfolio Committee of Justice and Correctional Services, we're not present when General Matagata raised the issues regarding NPA's however, the presentation today to me tried to clear whatever may be obtaining, and I'm happy because the two now heads of our very important institutions are more than prepared to continue working together. Because without their cooperation as a country, we will not be able to fight this scourge of corruption and other very serious crimes. And again, Chairperson, co-chairperson, I'm very much happy of this multidisciplinary approach in fighting this scourge of crime. But I'm a bit disturbed, Chairperson, because this issue dates back from last year, around 30 July 2017, in the media, Citizen Sunday Times, it was reported that a task team has been formed regarding the state of capture. And that the NPA had reported to take that report very, very seriously. Now I thought since then there were supposed to have been drastic steps which were supposed to have been taken. Now we have it has been reported that some suspects, I know legally we are not supposed to name some, have left the don't intimidate me, Advocate. No, I'm referring to Advocate Bumlan. Some suspects might have left the country. Now, my first question I would like to know, are you in terms of Frede Farm, correct? Are you not able to implement international instruments which South Africa have ratified to assist in bringing those back to face the might of the law? Another issue, co-chairperson. It's taking much time on only one case. This the last one, the eighth one, Estina, the eighth leg. So other cases, the first up to the seventh leg. What's happening? What's obtaining now? Because I'm afraid. As soon as it appears the PCI busy its investigations, and I suspect there might be leakage of information. Why all of a sudden, when busy with investigations, the suspects are able to, you know, to evade justice? Your risk management policies of the two institutions, how are they? How safe are they? And then I'm also concerned about those other 1 to 7 links. What's happening? What's obtaining? Thanks for now, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Just a few questions from my side as well. You know, I was listening and I advocate the... You say that you appointed a specialized team to be part of the multidisciplinary investigation. But somewhere in your presentation, you then contradict yourself to an extent that you question the very ability of your investigation, the integrated team that you've deployed. Because nowhere in the presentation is your team able to solve case questions during the investigation if they are integrated. You keep mentioning the advocate Govinda as the one that is a quality checker. But earlier you did mention that she also formed part of this team, heading actually. But later in your presentation, she also is only a quality controller that seems to be dragging on questions that are not resolved in the investigation if the integrated approach works. Unless it's just simply integrated by name, is not sitting together and considering the matters together and be able to say, this is what we must resolve when the docket is submitted, everything is done. So that worries me, because this chair, for me, it sounds to me as if it's a sounding board that's standing at a distance, that's not really dirtying their hands in that investigation in an integrated manner. Why would it be that when the docket is submitted in November 2017, your other team then raises the question of the financial analysis when they were part and parcel of this joint investigation team? And why would it be that when there are cases already confirmed by your investigation team, the complex analysis must be the stumbling block to an action? Secondly, you raised the question about, and you keep referring to Advocate Govinda, concerns raised about possible flight risk. But nothing is said in terms of that, what has been done to actually mitigate, to deal with that particular question. You say there was some monitoring that was going to be effected. Why isn't it that the very advocate would say, in respect of these, which are the flight risk, this is what we need to do to block it. This is what we need, this is the action that we need, and these are the provision that we can use in the act that governs our function and operation to be able to mitigate us. Or to say, we need to take the passport away, we need to take these things. those things are all in your purview. They're all in your desk. You can do it. You can apply them. And you're talking about them as back as 2017. And you report that the flight, the people left the country during holiday. But why did... It seems to me that it looks like people were helped to leave. Were simply helped to... This whole thing about backwards and forward and not actioning it, you can raise the concern that I'm concerned about this if the intention is to create a passage. And then on formal record, you have raised it as a concern, and then and the passage happened. You covered because you've raised the concern. And I'm not necessarily alleging, but I'm saying you can. So it can be that the whole thing here, and that, let me take this to the second question, third question, is this selective, how do you deal with this perception of the selective prosecution that it is there in the media in terms of what, in terms of yourself, 4 months down the line? I think just to go back to the General Matakata's question, is that the docket was submitted. There is no dispute about the docket being submitted in November 2017. The only thing that the NDP suggests is that there was something outstanding in their view, and one of the key was a financial analysis that they wanted it to happen, that they want that to happen. And I don't hear anywhere to say that was the only leg that on which the case was hinging on. There were other cases that could have been taken. And of course, you end all the time you add on your charges in the process of investigations or during the investigation if some other cases comes up. Why this is now my towards the end, Chair. I'm really just worried about this. Or maybe the preservation order on the asset forfeiture, when was that issued? And when was that, in fact, applied for, advocate? The SCOPA report, you mentioned the SCOPA briefing. And I assume, Chair, that, or that's my assumption, that as we discuss these matters here, we all are all automatically under oath, or that perhaps it's a different process. But my assumption is that lying to Parliament becomes an offence, without suggesting that anybody lied, because we can... The SCOPA report worries me. In the SCOPA, when I was reading the SCOPA briefing, it suggested that there were about 100, it's reported to have 100 cases that is prioritized in terms of your report to SCOPA. Now, that, all of which are not part, I don't hear them in a part of the 8 legs that you've spoken about. So perhaps in your, if you go back to SCOPA and refresh your mind in terms of SCOPA, it can also help us to understand that. Thank you, Chair.
Ramadakani, Honourable Aoun.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, I must add my voice to my colleague sitting to the left in saying that the impression I also formed while listening to the presentation was that the approach here was really very fragmented rather than integrated. And I want to also make the following statement and get some comment from Mr. Abrams, and that also relates to the independence of the NPA in this regard, something you will know we've touched based on many times with him. To say that it would seem to me that from the NPA side, everything only gathered steam in 2018. Before that, I agree with my colleague to the left. It would seem to me that there are many issues was placed on record formally to come and later say, but we did not we're not guilty of dereliction of duty, but if we talk about prosecutor-guided investigations, there was no real guidance in terms of saying, look, guys, if we need to expedite this, I need this and this and this within the next few weeks, in 2017 at least. There's talk of bail issues being recorded, talk of the DPCI being informed of prima facie cases against four suspects of foreign descent. And then, interestingly enough, there's talk of adequate measures to be being put in place in respect of the flight risk. But that's more or less what is out there, apart from also saying, but yeah, we need different financial investigations. And then, lo and behold, we're informed that everything was put on ice in December. Now, Chair, with the greatest of respect, if the NPA and the DPCI was really serious in tackling this thing of state capture, which has brought South Africa to the precipice, in my respect, there was to be no holiday in December. So I think we need an explanation as to, with time sensitivities around this, and we all know the history of suspects ultimately fleeing the country, why the decision was taken not to proceed in December, or was it maybe because everybody waited for 20 December around that time to see how the wind will be blowing in 2018. Then, talking about the flight risk, it's interesting that Mr. Abrams says adequate measures were in place. So the question is now, adequate measures to attain what? A defense here, or to prevent suspects from fleeing? Because obviously, quite possibly only the first yardstick could be met in saying to us it was assessed, it was talked about. And then they talk about monitoring suspects, but yet, on his own version, and to my mind, one of the prime suspects fled while arrests at his house was made of other people. So when was the monitoring then stopped? Because obviously by the time the arrests were made, the monitoring was not in place or obviously were not accurate. Then, Chair, the issue is now, or the case is now postponed till the 17th of August this year. So it's coincidentally more or less a year after the docket was first handed to the NPA to attend to outstanding issues. But I think we must be appraised as to what is this outstanding issue. Will it lead to further arrests? Because the one issue that has not been addressed here, and yesterday we also met with the public protector in this regard, is that the Istina matter and the money laundering and the corruption and the theft of public funds ultimately meant to better the lives of some of the poorest people in the Free State did not happen in a vacuum. It happened as part of the political system, the government system, where politicians is also involved. So we need to be appraised as to what extent has the investigation progressed to look at where the money ultimately went, and to look at how all of this was facilitated and enabled by politicians. Because there's a whole absence at this stage, it would seem, from these two institutions in this regard. And then my last question, Chair, is the special director, the way I understand the NPA Act, and specifically Section 24.3, is supposed to act in consultation at all times in performing her duties as the special director with the relevant DPP. So I think we need to be appraised as to whether that happened, and if it happened, to what extent, because it would seem that the effectiveness of all of this could also have been hampered by acting in a silo without involving relevant DPPs. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Your Honourable Member, Honourable Breitenbach.
Thank you, Chair. I align myself, of course, with the questions of the both the gentlemen to my left and the very astute points they've made. I would like to, however, ask, in particular, Advocate Govender, about what drove the ideas about arrest warrants and not arresting people. Advocate Govender, in an interview on ENCA, said that arrest warrants are only issued in special cases where suspects are considered a flight risk, not likely to appear before court. Otherwise, and she confirmed that there was no application for arrest warrants made early this year. And she had indicated they decided to summons people to court. Now, I'm somewhat confused. These people are prime suspects. We all know who we're talking about. We're talking about the Guptas, their direct family, Jacob Zuma and his son, Dudizani. The Guptas, and at least Dudizani Zuma, are widely known to have assets abroad, considerable assets abroad, homes abroad, access to private aircraft, they travel extensively, and by their own admission have more than one passport. If these are not people who are considered special cases and a flight risk, then in my 26 years of prosecuting, I clearly didn't know what was. Because these are the types of people that you would most certainly arrest, that you would most certainly place serious restrictions on. You would oppose bail. And if bail was granted, you would impose serious restrictions on the ability to travel and to move. And bail would be huge amount of money. None of this was done. It's bizarre. It's completely unheard of. It's impossible that these people could not have been considered flight risks. Yet, nothing was done to prevent them traveling. Nothing was done to limit their ability to leave the country. And go figure, they're all gone. Then, as early as August 2013, the specter of state capture was in the public domain. The National Treasury and the Public Protector were investigating, and investigative journalists were doing an unbelievably good job of revealing the extent thereof. The police and the NPA both failed to act at all, despite public pressure. There was a forensic analysis available of the Gupta leaks, which became available in the public domain as early as June 2017. There was comprehensive and unbelievably good forensic analysis available. And the only thing that remained for the police and the NPA to do was to verify that information. The information was there. It was all there. All they had to do was verify. That's not a hard job. Mr. Adams has made a long song and dance this morning of telling us what a hard job it is. It's not. Been there, done that, got the T-shirt, it can be done. But surprisingly, for as long as Jacob Zuma remained president of this country and in control of the system of patronage, no action was taken against any one of those people. And it was obviously politically manipulated that even they could see it. However, astonishingly, as soon as Zuma lost his grip on power, as soon as he was obviously no longer the flavor of the month, the police flew into action. And the NPA flew into action. And even then, no one of significance has been arrested. The main perpetrators have all been allowed to leave the country because they were not regarded as flight risks. Really. It's painfully obvious that this entire process has been politically driven. Both the police and the NPA are required by law to act independently. They haven't done that. I would like an explanation. I must also add, General Matakata specifically, I was a prosecutor for 26 years, ma'am. I have never witnessed a prosecutor throwing anyone under the bus like you were thrown under the bus today. It's a disgrace.
prosecutors and police are supposed to work together, they're supposed to protect each other, they're supposed to help each other. You clearly had none of that. That's a great, great pity, because it's obvious that you're trying to do a damn good job. Then I have a question for Mr. Abrams. Is it correct, Mr. Abrams, and I have this on very reliable information, that you deliberately blocked any asset forfeiture action on Trillium? You allowed them grudgingly to proceed on McKinsey, and you made it very clear that no action would be taken on Trillium until after the ANC elective conference. Is that true? And if it is, I'd like an explanation. Abbott Abrams comes here today and tells us about all the work they did, and he listed it very efficiently and effectively. Talks about 373 Section 205 subpoenas. Now that sounds impressive. It sounds like a lot of work. I want to tell you it isn't. A Section 205 subpoena is a pro forma document that gets done almost every single day, and most of the work is done by the police. Prosecutor signs it and that's it. It's not impressive. It's not a lot of work. And that goes for a lot of the documents he suggested. Mutual legal assistance, 7 countries engaged. Once you've done the one application, they're pretty much all the same. You just change the name of the country. Not that hard. There was a lot of talk about bad information, which was outstanding, it hadn't been verified. Well, why not? It's an important issue. You've got suspects who are decidedly at flight risk. Why wasn't the bad information verified? Why wasn't it expedited? Why was nothing done to prevent these people leaving the country? They're all gone. And it's going to take a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of effort to get them back. And it's really just shockingly bungled entirely this process. Thank you.
Honourable Member, Honourable Kola Barnard.
Thank you, Chairperson. Well, really this has got to be one of the most bungled investigations of all time. And nothing, not one word of what I've heard here today has convinced me that there's not been an impenetrable political net of protection thrown over the entire Gupta family. Certainly this meeting is not about the delay alone, ostensibly caused by the NPA. From the time the investigation into the Guptas was completed and handed over until the time, for reasons I have yet to understand, the NPA gave permission for the raid of the Guptas' more or less empty nest. Now, General, certainly there was nothing stopping you from preparing a detailed rundown of your meetings, and I do hope we will get that. Surely you would have should have understood that your colleague next to you would have done exactly that and prepared extensively. But the Hawks told us they waited on the NPA. Now, the chairperson of the Justice Committee said earlier that they should not wait, and I absolutely agree with that and have always believed it to be so. So does the delay lie with the Hawks? Does the delay lie with the Hawks or with the NPA? Yet the head of the NPA has basically said the head of the Hawks was misleading the committee. I agree, he threw her under the bus. Let me quote her. Quote, the time they, that's the NPA, the time they took is a concern. They took their own time and people left the country and Athol Gupta is a fugitive. Now, why would the head of the Hawks, what does she have to gain from misleading this committee? I can't think of anything. The NPA took a decision to seize evidence first, make no arrests at that stage, and you imagine that would tip no one off. You always knew about the flight risks, yet delayed and delayed, month after month. It just sounds like a carefully laid out set of excuses. The Guptas knew the Hawks were coming, and they left never to be seen again, except at the South African Embassy in London, popping in to thumb his nose at the ambassador, I presume. I can't think of another reason. The head of the DPCI says she raised the delays with you, sir, and with the minister. The NPA denies she ever spoke to him about it. Chairperson, I would propose that we ask the former minister to be called here to testify before this committee, and let's clear this up once and for all. Now, thank you. While you were working together, as you claimed, this delay in giving the go-ahead for the arrests to be made, despite the paperwork being handed over, you claimed the investigation was ineffective. Now, you put it aside for a festive season. I have to agree with my colleague. The SAPS members work every day and all days and right through the festive season. So that is a foreign, it's foreign to this committee that you would sail off on holiday while such a crucial matter is on the front page of every paper around the world. And yet you all went off on holiday. So the prosecution team were satisfied that the DPCI would keep watch on the potential accused. Yet on the 6th of December, you say you raised the issue of arrest. The prosecutors kept telling you, no wait, no wait, no wait. What is that saying to you? I know what it's saying to me. You must surely agree that the delay between the time you received the information from the DPCI and the time of the empty nest arrests, empty of Guptas, of course, was far, far, far too long. You're talking 7 months. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And it does seem to a layperson that the NPA maybe should itself be investigated in terms of this, these delays. When you are advised by people around you, no, no, don't arrest people, don't do that, don't do that, what is it telling us? I know what it's telling me. Now, we heard of prosecution-driven investigations, and, of course, that was what was used to shut down the Scorpions. And yet this method, I agree again, didn't work, did it? Because if you say their investigation wasn't up to scratch, you were the people advising them what to investigate. Now, really, if you're going to talk, may I ask, suggest you wait until it's your turn?
Correct you. It's prosecutor-guided investigation.
Chair, would you please? Thank you.
Yeah, members, just let's keep the temperature low. You can go ahead, member. Thank you.
Right. The people have left the country as the docket was handed over. That tells me they knew what was in that docket. It tells me that they needed time also to gather up their money, transfer, move things on planes, suitcase loads of who knows what. They knew this was coming. So there is someone in there who was telling them, apart from, of course, all the headlines in the papers. And journalists are doing the jobs that they're paid to do. So don't go around blaming them for leaking information. You should have had a lid on this thing. You should have had the arrest done 8 months ago. You know that. We know that, really. It is appalling what's happened. Now, you chose not to bring Knox Malele. To this meeting, and he is very unhappy about how apparently you obstructed the case. It'd be most interesting, and I would ask that that he be brought here to give further information on this entire matter, which has been so carefully crafted. I didn't think I could still be shocked, but I am.
Honourable Member, Honourable Mbele.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think it's important to say at the outset that from the Police Portfolio Committee perspective, it's not only in terms of the DPCI that we've had quite a long-standing and strong impression about delays and bottlenecks on the parts of the NPA. We've had the same from the IPED, where when they present their Section 9 reports, the bulk of the cases are always still awaiting decision from the NPA. And we've heard from the ED that in a number of those where there's a decline to prosecute, they are often not happy with that decision, and with good reason. The NPA will be aware that soon the Auditor General will be empowered to make direct referrals to the NPA for prosecutions. And if these problems around delays and bottlenecks continue, then they're going to have not just the Police Committee and the Justice Committee breathing down their necks, but also SCOPA and the Standing Committee on the Auditor General. So as a general comment, the issue of how casework and case flow is managed and done so more effectively and more efficiently is an important one, and it's going to continue being an important one. Now, turning to the input from Advocate Abrahams, there was a fair amount of detail and sort of unpacking the steps along the way. But the nub of it, from my reading, was that the key disagreements was on whether by November last year the investigation by the Hawks was completed, was finalized, and whether the docket that was handed over was done and dusted. The NDPP says no. The acting DPCI head says yes. And the thread that ran through Advocate Abraham's presentation was that the NPA team kept raising technicalities about gaps and shortcomings that were in the submissions from the DPCI. And I have to say, my initial sentiment is that it's very easy to interpret that constant raising of technicalities as being obstructionist, and therefore, at the very least, feeding into the narrative that there's ulterior motives in stalling and delaying the finalization of the process. As Honorable Breitenbach said, much of the information was already in the public domain in terms of reporting by investigative journalists. It then becomes a matter of verifying. We don't need to reinvent the wheel. So the seeming obstructionism is a big problem. Now, my first question relates to the arrest issue, and it's a slightly different angle to the question that Honorable Breitenbach asked, because she asked why the cases relating to the Guptas were not considered special cases, drawing from Advocate Govender's public statements. But that question assumes the merits of the premise that only special cases would warrant an arrest warrant. Mine is a slightly broader question, taking a step back, which is to ask, why was it that an absolutely watertight prima facie case was essential for arrest to be made? Because my understanding, and I stand to be correct, and I'm happy to be so, my understanding is that the mere fact of being a suspect is sufficient to be arrested in the first instance. People get arrested for being suspects all the time while investigations are ongoing. So the question really is it completely impossible for a suspect to be arrested while there's an ongoing investigation, in particular so that if it's so warranted, conditions of bail can then be imposed, i.e. if somebody is a serious flight risk, then there's a confiscation of their passports. So I'm not entirely satisfied with this notion around special cases. We need a watertight prima facie first. You know, arrest is an allowable action on the part of law enforcement to mitigate the kind of risks and to enable their work going forward. Secondly, on that flight risk issue, and this question is perhaps more directly for the DPCI, is so we've heard that on the day of the Hawks pouncing, some of the suspects were nabbed, but one of them, the Gupta brother, AJ Gupta, was the one who was able to flee. Now, that had to have been in a time window of a couple of hours at most. Would it not have been prudent, given the risk factors, to effect simultaneous arrests? Because if you are monitoring the suspects and you're planning carefully and meticulously to then pull the trigger metaphorically, to you know where they are at the same time, and you grab them at the same time so that one is not tipped off while the lesser fish has essentially happened.
are the ones who are caught first. So would that not have been the more, prudent approach, and why was that not done? And still on the flight risk issue, there was mention of the fact that there was monitoring of the borders or the suspects, I can't remember, in acknowledgement of the flight risk factor. What exactly were those measures for monitoring the flight risk suspects? Was there formal and clear liaison with Home Affairs, for example, to set up the systems and to ensure that there would be rapid detection and response when that flight risk became imminent, as it obviously became, and ultimately they got away. So just some explanation on that, those flight risk measures. And then finally, on the issue that was raised by Honourable Horn, around whether or not there truly was an integrated approach with this. Why is the process of all the legs of the state capture investigations, why is all of that not housed under the anti-corruption task team? Because surely having them under one umbrella, all the issues centering in or coming into one hub, so you can draw the cross linkages and you can refer and compare the information as it relates to the multiple aspects. That will enhance alignments and therefore effectiveness. Is the anti-corruption task team even functional and effective at the current moment, or is it still suffering the effects of the hawks having been compromised, captured, and crippled during the tenure of the former DPCI General Glemeza? Thanks, Chair.
Member Honourable Maluchi.
No, thanks, the co-chairperson. I have some 9 clarification questions with regards to the NPA. As we have 21 case issues to be considered as members of parliament. So the first worry is about what the advocate Abraham said, blaming the Hawks Head, General Matakata, that she went public by telling us as Parliament the frustration. While on point 4, it is alleged that it was a common cause that NPA always takes a year to decide on the matter. The question is, what do you expect Advocate Abrams to General Matakata to do if it is a common cause that NPA delay for a year to decide on the case? The second issue is about the violation by the NDPP to use Section 43 of the Criminal Procedure Act instead. That section clearly says that is the magistrate or justice to issue a warrant is a concern also. So the issue of selective prosecution by the NPA is a matter of concern to us as EFF, because as EFF we open several cases. We never heard anything about what is happening on that. That is part of selective prosecution. So we can make an example of selective prosecution. You rushed at a supersonic speed when you charge the then former minister, who is a minister of state enterprise, Sean Abrahams, to charge him to go to court, and you again withdrew. You went at a supersonic speed when you charge Advocate Breidenbach. You never delayed like what we see here in the state capture. That is called selective prosecution, what we are doing. So the other issue which we want to raise is the 18-man team dedicated you created with the National Treasury and Financial Intelligence Center. With this 18-man team, there was nobody of DPCI, of Hawks, to be part of this 18-man team. So why did you exclude the Hawks to be part of this 18-man team to investigate? So the other thing is about the cooperation between you and the International Relations Department, because we have people who skipped the country. So what is the involvement of the NPA in terms of engaging our Department of the International Relations and Cooperation, so that those people must be traced and found? So the other issue is, when you are investigating this state capture matter, the Hawks finished the investigation, handed everything to you in November, but you still consider to outsource the investigation by engaging this the law firm called Brahmans and the G9 Forensics. So it's a parallel investigation, or you don't trust the Hawks what they submitted to you? So we want the clarity on that. And again, it's about the docket of the state capture, the one for Free at the Farm, which was submitted to your office in November 2017. And you delay arrest on the allegation that you are still investigating financial analysis. According to me, that the arrest can be effected and further investigation can still proceed. The cases have been postponed in court for further investigation. So, but for you, for this one, this special one of Fried, which has Gupta's involved, you choose to delay for further financial analysis. We don't understand why. Because it's a public cry here that there was a money looted in such a way that even some money were used for wedding processes. So why do you specifically delay it? Because the Hawks and the acting head said she's worried that it's taking too long to arrest. In point 15 of this paper I'm having now, that why do you drag feet in this matter? The other issue is about the AFU, Asset Forfeiture Unit, which has a prosecution order for Friday Dairy Farm, which the suspect were not arrested. But according to the information, Knox Malele said that Advocate Abrams and Advocate Gavin stopped him to go on arrest, issue an arrest for these members who are involved here. Hence, you can see people in Free State that are still working free. Everybody there, the Premier, the MECs involved, they're still working free. Why? It's because the NPA, according to our belief, is still politically captured. So we can't have the NPA, which has been used as an instrument to deal with the political opponent. That's why, hence, all the cases of the EFF are not entertained. So to us, we see as a matter of concern, Advocate Abrams, about your approach in these state capture cases. And we would like maybe the chairperson of the Senate Committee of Justice, because this concern, which 21 concern, they qualify for the head of NPA to be charged, to be put under DC. There are enough to prove on a balance of probability that you can't pursue these cases. not on the balance of probability, this is enough to prove our case, that the Minister of Justice together with the President must make sure that the head of the, otherwise this case of state capture, it will be just a rhetoric what we're speaking now. We need supersonic speed in this matter, because billions of money are went out of the country, and people, the docket went to the hands of the NPA. The NPA in November 2017, they delayed. Today they claim that no, those people left the country during holidays, while the docket went to their hands before those holidays. What was this delay, Chairperson? Except if the NPA is captured for political reasons. That's our point. And the SEFF will fight about this matter. And we still need the justice and the president to account, to explain, more especially to our cases in the EFF, which we opened with the evidence. The police, they can see evidence. And according to us, we agree that the Hawks, if they investigate, the police work is to investigate. And the prosecution work is to charge the people. It's not up to them to decide. The court will decide and discharge or convict. Not them said, no, we still need this and this. No. Whatever they have in hand after the Hawks submit to them, they must brought the matter to court. But here, on the state capture, everything is very on a snail pace. It's a concern for us as the members of parliament. And we would like maybe the chairperson to also guide the advocate, Abrahams, that when he appears before us, he mustn't be a reactive man and react when the member of parliament was presenting and just jump in. We gave him a chance to present. We listen. Then we are talking. You must listen and not down. Thank you very much, chairperson.
Thank you, honourable member. Honourable Chongo.
Thank you very much, Jefferson. Sorry for being just a bit delayed. This is one of those. Jefferson, in 1972 in the USA, there were some burglaries that were done in what was then referred to as Watergate under President Nixon, and President Nixon was directly involved. And fortunate, I think that country was fortunate, because it took them from 1972, and in 1974, President Nixon resigned, because FBI was then hot on the heels investigating the matter. It's worse with us as a country in the Republic, because first of all, you go to Judge Squire's filing or judgment on the 31st of May 2005, which judgment actually then touched clearly, or it actually revealed to us that the former president was directly implicated in this series of corruption that involved Shabir Sheikh, French companies, etc. That actually opened up the state and threatened not only our own existence, but even our own security or our own sovereignty as a nation, because of the office the man occupied. Today, we have had a number of inquiries made by dedicated members who took an oath of parliament, and some of them have fallen on their sword. Dr. Khoza being one, the leader of investigation in the state capture, being bribed by the then Minister of State Security. Fortunately, that man coming out openly, refusing the bribe, until one of our esteemed judges said, here is the nation that is actually then lying helpless. One of the judges said that, saying that you have got USA organs of state, taking action on state capture in South Africa, in the United Kingdom, but in South Africa, Hawks and NPA, Tolono, waiting for the conference of the ruling party in December. Now, even the presentation, which is very good, if you look at it, and I think the head of NPA, you will see the emphasis lies around the area of November, December. And criminals, and that conference, I think, took place somewhere in December, as we all know. And we would be expecting citizens of South Africa for almost 10 years being helpless. Honorable members of parliament trying to do their best. All evidence, everything is just there. Because it's not only Friday. The country, I used to say to my comrades in EFF, we are a nation that has been raped standing by only three members of the Gupta family. With the former president holding our arms, holding you as organs of state, not to move at all. Now, that tells us that the element of professionalism has been wanting over these years. Chairperson of my committee, you will recall, as I raised in one of our meetings of the Portfolio Committee on Police, that in case that one alone, the plundering of land, whereby taxpayers' money is used or is sourced according to the policy of the government of willing seller, willing buyer, what on land. You go there where at Manjovini, where Chief Pumula is in hiding, not fearful of those criminals that are out there, but criminals that have been heading even the country because members of the family are involved in the plundering of land. And I raised even the question of Ongoye, where the former public protector instructed Hawks to investigate abuse of state funds, which I'm not going to waste time for this committee on, and those people there, because there are some minerals that have been detected underneath, and those minerals must benefit family members of the former head of state. And the legible people who are supposed to be beneficiaries of that land. Mr. Zulu is still alive, fortunately he's there. No action by Hawks, nothing. It's so astonishing that when we come to Friday, where our own people, I thought Nongauze died some years back, had to be told by government representative in the name of Museveni Zwane to sell out everything because they stand to benefit from the state. And Museveni Zwane is here. As a member of parliament, we are compelled to say, honorable member, what is honorable in a dishonorable person? No action. Indeed, if I were part of the Guptas, I was going to do exactly what they have done. Waiting for the conference of the ruling party, if then the faction that protected me doesn't win, I fly. Who's stupid to wait for terror to rain on him? You, TPCI, you were saying, please surrender yourselves. Until our good media told you, no, they left 4 months ago. And I was watching my TV yesterday that they have built some beautiful temples in India, in one of the towns of their own. Fortunately, the Indian specialized units of combating crime, they have actually pounced on them. But in South Africa, my own country, they are kings landing even in our own first military bases as princes and princesses, undermining even, you know, making ourselves to be ashamed to call ourselves South Africans in the first place, raped standing by only three guys, very young guys, because they have got a hook on number one, former number one of this country. Even the designer Zuma, I'm told, is nowhere to be found. And the hawks are just, no, we don't know.
Point of order, Chairperson.
Yes.
Parky? Yes. No, I think we are now making speeches here.
No, I'm not.
We must be focused on what we want to deal with here, is to remove whatever hindrance might be in between the NPA and the Hawks. I would suggest that you rein in. Otherwise, everybody is going to give a political speech. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, with your respect, Chairperson, I am a politician as a member of parliament. And I think I will be failing in my duty if I can actually then renege from making a political, particularly coming from KZN, when right now we expect at any time bloodshed, my own people in that province to pay for the sins of failure of the state.
Honorable,
now, Chairperson, I cannot, okay, thanks.
Can I just say that we respect your right to speak, but all other members have the right to speak. And we met for a particular purpose. If we have to hear evidence about what is happening, everything, everywhere, the purpose of this meeting would be defeated.
Okay.
Can we agree that let's be focused and deal with the issues at hand?
Chairperson, it's a pity because members here have been making statements without any interjection. But I agree with you. When you touch the raw nerve, we are where we are because we are paying for sins of our own foolishness as a nation, of closing our eyes when we are supposed to be opening our eyes to reality. You know, Chairperson, I'll be very short in closing because I don't have time to waste. We had to shut down the Scorpions, preparing for this very mess that we have right now. Today, we pretend as if we don't know what we were intending when we had to shut down the Scorpions, because we said we want the police to remain police and NPA to remain NPA. Today, we want NPA and police to work together. We have forgotten about the decisions we took yesterday because we wanted to create a mess that today we can be able to pass a buck to somebody else. When Scorpions were actually mercilessly decimating these elements. Now, Chairperson, yes.
We will give you a second bite.
Okay.
If we have time, but it would be unfair if other members don't have time to speak. I think you have made your point.
Sorry, Chairperson. Can I just say, in conclusion, Chair. You see, Chairperson, I hope you are not trying to intimidate me. Because other members have spoken and I have waited patiently, and as a member of parliament, I don't want to actually abrogate my responsibility of actually standing firm. I have paid for the sins, or for the right cause. And even in the even here, if then to be here, we need then to see Zonya Nyalata as if look at the state capture is just about Fred, not about the things that are actually glaring this nation, that remain uninvestigated, that are untouched. Even right now, we are still waiting for our own very same NPA to tell us whether they are going to prosecute Mr. Zuma or not, when all prima facie evidence is there. Thank you.
I raise my hand.
Yeah, thank you, members. We're a bit running behind. There's still four members, yeah, the two chairpersons plus two other members must still ask questions, so we'll take a 10-minute tea break, then we come back. Thank you very much.
My brother, can I ask a question? Is there a way we can get a copy of the submission? Can you take pictures of it?
I don't have it.
You don't have it, yeah?
I'll find out.
Is this the post system? Which one?
Are you looking for the presentation?
Yeah.
Email, do you know PMG?
Yes.
If you email PMG, they have it. They seem to be.
Oh, yeah.
It might even be on their website.
Already?
If you're a subscriber.
Oh, I'm not a paid subscriber.
Then I'm sure if you ask them, they'll send it to you.
What's the email address?
I'm not sure. If you just go to the PMG website,
okay.
You find a lady called Pumza, she should have it. But if you email anyone, they should be able to watch it.
Cool, thanks. Right. Yeah, I'll let them steal it, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think it's a for an MOU with Parliament to all submissions prior.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know why this I ate this morning at home. Today I got this urge to eat. It's not true with my but here come on now.
Honourable members, can we come back please for this session? Advocate Motsega is going to chair. Over to you.
Can we close the door at the back? Honourable members, we want to assure you that we have no intention of suppressing anyone when they put their questions, but only to remind all of us that we have equal rights to put questions, and we will not allow that only one or two people dominate the meeting and also raise issues that are not immediately pertinent to this session, because this meeting was called for a particular purpose. So what we will do now is we'll take four hands. The first one is Honorable Mpumlwan, Honorable Skosana, and that will be my co-chair, myself, and then we will give the Hawks and the MPA to respond. We'll have a second bite, because it also won't help us if we put all the questions and at the end there's no time for the Hawks and the NPA to respond. So can we proceed bearing in mind that we all have equal rights to speak, and also bearing in mind that we respect your full rights to speak, and we have no intentions to suppress anyone. And we will then proceed, Honorable Mpumlwan.
Thank you. I just wonder if we couldn't wait a second for the ladies, because General Matanata is just going to be so let's see if coming back first.
Questions. If the questions require her attention, proceed.
Thank you. I only have more of a comment than question. I want to thank you, Advocate Abrams, and General Mastakata. I appreciate the spirit of your cooperation, and also between the two institutions. I hope that the operation committee established in by Section 17D3 of the SAFS Act will meet regularly and solve any bottlenecks in the prosecution cases of the crime, such that only serious misunderstanding can be brought to the committee. That is, those that cannot be solved where you need assistance from Parliament. Secondly, I hope that you will also look at other state capture-related cases like the Glencore and other spread, so that it's not only on. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and greetings to the entire House. Yeah, I think we appreciate the presentation from both Advocate Abrams and General Mastakata. Well, we are happy to hear that there's no standoff. We're happy to hear that. However, there's this perception which I think some of my colleagues, I think, have commented about. It's a perception, but it's also an allegation, allegation of selective prosecution that have been leveled against the NPA. And this becomes so serious when you find that even some key role players like your IPT would level this kind of allegation to say there's a selective prosecution from the side of the NPA. So I want to get a response from Advocate Abrahams. Is that true? If not, why is there such a perception, especially from key role players like IPT and also from the public? Secondly, I just want to check, is there any time frame from the side of the NPA that you have set yourself to deal with these challenges, these issues that we're talking about, so as to put ourselves at ease and the public at ease to say indeed the NPA is going to deal with this matter? Is there any time frame that you are looking at as you deal with these particular matters? Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair Session. I've got just two questions, and that's for Advocate Abrams. The one is, he raised the issue of the operational committee in his presentation. I just want to know, was that raised also with other role players, with the Minister of Justice, other DGs? Because I think it's clearly one thing that was raised today that should be taken up by both of the committees, that we need to have that operational committee in place. It's quite essential in terms of coordination, teasing out difficulties and better liaison, so that's quite important. Then the second issue relates to the timeline in December that a lot of the colleagues have raised. And I just want to know, of course, there is various task teams within the NPA that's working with these matters and forums that discuss it. And I just want to know from Advocate Abrams, was there any other reason, apart from those technical reasons he's forwarded today, that was a decision may be made in December to not to proceed with any arrest or movement on those subpoena dockets? Was there any other reason, or was it communicated at any other forum within the NPA? If you can just maybe indicate that to the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Advocate Abrams, I am a children's rights advocate, and that's why during break I asked Advocate Govender a question, which I normally would not do,
whether she has children. And she said she has a child. Now, I say she is the regional head of prosecution in the Western Cape. And the events that we're talking about are largely taking place in Gauteng and the Free State. And I also want to assume that there are many experienced people in the NPA at head office. Why would you find it necessary to take someone in the regional office in Western Cape, who is a mother, to go and deal with the matters in Gauteng when there should be other senior people available there? And also in your report, she seems to be very central in everything. Could it be that she's being groomed for promotion or something like that? The other question would be, there is a perception also that arose from our meeting with the public protector that we seem to be targeting officials and junior people. If you look at the Estina matter, the project was driven by the politician. Decisions were taken by the cabinet of the Free State. But when it comes to arrest or action, both by yourselves and by the public protector, the politicians don't feature. Would that not perhaps justify the perception that there is selective prosecution? Could you tell us why there doesn't seem to be any action against the politicians and only officials? And then if you could just help us understand why that is the case, because we want to believe that when we apply the law, it must be applied equally, without fear and favor, regardless of who is involved and regardless of the people standing in government and in society, because justice must be seen to be done and not only be expected to be taken. That's all.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to start in responding to the issues that are relevant to the DPCI. Probably it would be important to refer to the questions that were raised by Honorable Malibati. And I've already, I think, accepted and agreed when you stated that this was a presentation that I didn't have. And I would like the committees to give me an opportunity. I would want to respond to all the issues that are raised, because I'd like to also correct if there are some inaccuracies I'm picking up, that I respond to the comprehensive report and that I answer to all those things and clarify some of the issues that are contained in the report. Then I would just briefly also want to touch on one aspect that was raised that was made reference by Honorable Mhlongo with regard to another honorable member that I, in the last appearance before the Portfolio Committee on Police, I indicated that there are dockets or matters that have been maybe with the NPA for even a year or so. And I would also give that report to the NPP, as we also indicated once the list. There are some that I might have referred to for intervention from his side, but I'm going to do it a national kind of report around that, that it is indeed a concern, but I will raise it with him and give that list from a national perspective that speaks to exactly that issue. There are assertions that have been made or referred to in terms of the report that there might be perceptions that we are at loggerheads. We are not at loggerheads. As correctly pointed out, we do meet on these matters and discuss and even give direction or be briefed as well. So that I would want to clarify. There is no issue of being at loggerheads with the NTPP. I think we're both clear about our mandate and therefore the working relationship that needs to exist between the two entities. There is an indication that there's a question why probably the monitoring measurement that was in place for us to have not have had other people or suspects having fled the country, what measures in terms of monitoring them as being flight risk. And I think in that response that was given, the report that was given, I will state also clearly what transpired in terms of the indication that some of the suspects are flight risk and how soon should we proceed with these matters. But what I would like to point out, in the absence of any warrant of arrest that was there, it was not going to be possible to flag, if I may put it like that, people who were not yet at that time wanted or perceived. But in terms of monitoring, it might be monitoring if the people are around the country as yet or not. There's an indication that some of the people or suspects left in August already, 2017. So it was two people that had been out of the country by that time. It's not as if it was the entire, or it was not as if it was the probably most of those who are from foreign countries. But what I would want to point out is that in us monitoring those that would have been arrested, we couldn't flag them with any other department before people were given any warrants of arrest for them, because otherwise we would be probably breaking the law. I would end off.
Thank you. Thank you, General Matakata, chairpersons, members of the committee. Let me firstly start off by dispelling the misperception that has been created in respect of the briefing that I made. I certainly have no intention or for a perception to be created that I've thrown the proverbial throwing of General Matakata under the bus. That certainly was not the intention at all. It was merely a report that I've been given about the historical facts as to the engagement between the two parties, and I wanted to give a rendition of that. So if that perception was created, you know, we have a very great working relationship, and, you know, I want to apologize if that was the perception that was created. It certainly was not the intention, because I truly value the relationship that we have. Notwithstanding, let me continue and address the issues that have, in fact, you know, been raised by members of the committee. The President promised in his State of the Nation address that he's going to deal aggressively with corruption, and the question is, should any delay in this regard be seen as sabotage? I think with regards to the work of the NPA, we, of course, play a critical role
you know, role in the ACTT. And during our strategic planning session in November last year, we resolved to, of course, adopt a more aggressive stance in our approach to fighting corruption, maladministration, together with our stakeholders. Now, some of the powers that the National Director does have relate to the appointment of investigating directorates. So, as a leadership of the institution, we interrogated this issue, and of course, we then left it to the DPPs and the special directors to identify a number of, to identify cases within their areas of jurisdiction where investigating directorates can be appointed in respect of those specific matters. So a few submissions have been made to me where I have signed off on investigating directorates for the special director and the DPP to take the lead in that regard. Of course, we will work closely with the DPCI and other stakeholders on these issues. Of course, there's different scenarios. The NPA Act makes provision for the president to appoint an investigating directorate. We did not adopt that approach, you know, during last year or this year. Section 72 of the Prevention of Organized Crime Act and Section 22 and 23 of PECA, you know, domestic corruption legislation, makes provision for the National Director to appoint investigating directorates. Similarly, as I alluded to earlier on in my presentation, the head of the Hawks has the power to request the National Director to appoint investigating directorates in respect of matters that are meritorious or of such a grave nature for that approach to be adopted. And I think the time has come for that approach to be adopted. It's something that we will also discuss further, specifically with regard to ACTT-related matters. So to answer the question, could delays be seen to be sabotage? I can assure you from the NPA side and, you know, the working relationship that we've had with the Hawks to date, I cannot say that a delay in matters is a direct result or akin to sabotage. I wouldn't say that at all. There are various reasons why matters are delayed, and I think to ask a question, say, is there deliberate sabotage, I don't know of any matter where there has been deliberate sabotage in respect of an investigation. On the question, you know, what do we intend doing in respect of, you know, the foreign nationals that are linked, you know, and in respect of whom warrants of arrest have been authorized or linked to any of the state of capture investigation legs. Of course, the intention is to apply for the extradition of the individuals concerned. The challenge that you have when you apply for an extradition, if, for example, we apply for the extradition of suspects in the Estela matter, then we are only bound to try them in respect of the Estela matter. And we can't charge them in respect of the other matters in which they are potentially linked to. So it creates a bit of a difficulty in respect of the entire investigation and the strategy in which the prosecuting team, you know, intends adopting or has adopted in respect of the accused. And one really has to look at the bigger picture here, quite frankly. Regrettably, I can't go into detail on the specifics of the seven legs, who is linked to what. You know, people are innocent until proven guilty, and it's not my responsibility to come and sit before this portfolio, this joint portfolio committee, or to publicly say so-and-so is a suspect in this matter. I think it's inappropriate at this stage, to say the least. Who made the final decision in respect of the warrants? Well, I think that's a question that Advocate Govender will have to respond to. You know, I was merely briefed on these issues, and I think General Matakata was also briefed on these issues, so I don't know whether General Matakata gave the go-ahead, whether Advocate Govender gave the go-ahead.
I was merely briefed on the matter. On the matter. I don't know if you want to respond to that too immediately.
Can you address that so that we don't miss it?
Thank you, Chair and Committee members. I think I want to start off by firstly saying that one must, I think this notion that there is the NPA on the one side and the DPCI on the one side in terms of what was happening in terms of the work that was in respect of this matter must be dispelled. We work in a multi-agency approach, and as such, the investigation and the prosecution members sit together, go through what it is that there is in respect of this matter, give guidance, direction as to what is required, and based on that, the decisions are made and actions are taken. So with regard to the issues of the sufficiency of the evidence, ultimately that is the responsibility of the NPA to pronounce upon, but in pronouncing upon that, guidance would be given to the investigating officers as to how it is that those gaps need to be addressed. And I think it's important to note this process because it seems to be, there's an impression that seems to be created that the NPA is doing things in isolation of the investigation team, which is not the position, or vice versa. What had happened with regard to the issues of the warrants and the issues of the final decisions with the warrants, these were joint decisions that were made. Joint decisions that were made as to whether or not there was sufficient evidence in order for us to proceed, why there was not sufficient evidence to proceed, what it is that would be required in order to give that sufficient evidence. That decision was made by investigators and prosecutors. It was communicated to us. When it was communicated to us that there were certain reservations, Brigadier Bassi and myself engaged directly to go and look at this matter and give direction to the team. Once we gave the direction to the team, they made the final decision on the signing off of these warrants, which were then applied for by the police. And I think it's important to also note what the process is. The process is that a police official will give us a J50 together with an affidavit. That affidavit would have to set out what the prima facie case is, and in setting out what the prima facie case is, would also set out what those grounds to establish what the flight risk is. Now, one of the reasons why we wanted this is we've had instances where magistrates have come back to us and based on case law told us that they're not prepared to sign off on a J50 unless the state can show them that there is, in fact, when I talk about the state, I'm talking jointly about both the investigation and the prosecution, that we can show that arrest is required in these circumstances. So it was our view as a team, what was informed to me by the team, and this information was also something that both Brigadier Bassi and myself agreed to, that these arrest warrants needed to ensure that all these factors took into account that in order for us to ensure that when we took the matter to a magistrate did not come back to us and say, no, I'm not signing off on these warrants. The next step is if we nevertheless proceed with an arrest in those circumstances where a magistrate signs off without those warrants, we still have, or the police, let me say, questions start getting asked. You must understand every single piece of evidence that there is in this matter is, in fact, placed in the A-clip of the docket, and it comes under scrutiny at some stage by the defense. We have to disclose that type of information. So that's a conspect within which, you know, these joint decisions were made. So the prosecutors then get these arrest warrants. They give their advice to the investigating officers. Based on that, the drafting occurs. We have to satisfy ourselves that we are able to show from the evidence in the matter that we can, each of the allegations that are put into that warrant can be justified by way of the evidence. So that process did take some time. But that process was being dealt with jointly. It was not being dealt with in isolation of the two teams. They were working together, and I think the timelines that were explained show how it is that that work actually occurred. So the final decision, it was the prosecution and investigation team jointly that made that decision.
It gets worrying when you talk about this prima facie case. Honorable Mlauzi spoke about where there is reasonable suspicion, you arrest. I thought the prima facie case applies at the close of the state case. So maybe at some other point you will explain to us why the police wants to establish a prima facie case when the matter has not even come before the court. Honorable Advocate Sean.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to jump further because I've dealt with the issue of the extradition, as well as that raised by Ms. Matopo. So a further question was raised around what is happening in respect of the other seven legs. Well, the other seven legs are also the subject of investigation. Of course, at what stages we are in respect of these investigations, the only people that can comment on that is, of course, the prosecuting and investigating teams. I do think there's some progress that is being made insofar as, what I have been briefed on. And there are steps in the right direction to bring these matters to finality soonest. I'm deliberately not going into the facts or merits of the matters. I've discussed that with General Matakata as well. The leaking of information, that's always a problem. What we've learned over the last few years, and in fact the leaking of information in the NPA in particular stems back from the creation of the NPA. And that is a problem. That was a problem back then, and in certain instances it is difficult to contain that because there are people within the institution that would leak information to members of the public, members of the media, to politicians. And in 99% of those instances, it's misinformation. People latch onto this, and of course they try to create furores around particular issues. But I can assure you that in 99% of the instances, it's misinformation, and it's from people who want to appear to be relevant. Insofar as leaking information in the state of capture matter is concerned, we had a long discussion around that, and the prosecuting team itself had been isolated. Everybody wanted to know who's the prosecuting team. And these are senior members of the institution, leaders of the institution, DPPs, special directors, some deputy national directors wanted to know who are the members of the team. And we decided to isolate the members that are prosecuting this matter. It's on a need-to-know basis. And that's how we actually curtailed the leaking of the information. And I don't think any information has been leaked from the prosecuting team that I am aware of. Yeah, or the investigating team. Let me add that. I think the issue around case problem solving in respect of this particular matter, my understanding from the briefings that I received was that there was such a good relationship between the prosecutors and the investigators that if there were disputes, that these disputes were resolved internally through their own internal mechanisms. If issues had to be escalated to myself or to General Matakata, we would, of course, address those issues between each other, and that would then, of course, evolve downwards with instructions or directions or feedback being given either from my side or from General Matakata on issues that were in dispute. How do we deal with the issue of perceived selective prosecution? What many people don't understand is the structure of the NPA. Everybody thinks that the national director makes decisions to prosecute. There are thousands of cases that are on the court rolls on a daily basis. Do you really think that I make all those decisions? There's a very small percentage where I have made decisions in respect of matters. And those that only apply where I have reviewed those decisions or where policy directives have not been adhered to. So I have four deputy national directors who derive their powers through the national director. We then have 11 directors of public prosecution who have original powers to decide on matters that fall within their area of jurisdiction. So each and every prosecution that takes place in a province is taken under auspices and in the name of the director of public prosecutions for that province. Similarly, with regard to special directors.
I think spare us, not give us a lecture on that. I think people who are speaking about selective prosecution are specific. They think that we target junior people or people that are flying, and then we are not dealing with the big shots. So if you can just address this matter, the perception that the big shots are not being arrested, the processes, I think members would be aware of.
With respect, Honorable Chairperson, I think it's important for the public and for some members of the committee that do not understand this process to understand how the structures of the NPA work and where decisions are made, because the perception out there is that the national director makes all the decisions. If there's a non-prosecution in respect of a matter, it is the national director who is not prosecuted. If there is a prosecution in respect of a matter, it is the national director who has instituted that prosecution.
Chairperson, you see, the head of NPA must be reminded that he's the head of the NPA there, not here. Here, this is Parliament. This is Parliament. Thanks, Chair.
Just not lectures on the process. Take it as a given that we all understand. And then I appeal that those who don't understand, raise your hands and say you don't understand. Just go straight to the question of selective prosecution. Is there selective prosecution or not?
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I disagree that there are selective prosecutions. The directors of public prosecutions who make decisions to prosecute do so independently of the national director. I am briefed in respect of these matters. I will intervene if I need to review these matters, or you know, if policy consider policy directors have not been adhered to.
Yeah, no, a point of order, Jefferson. No, yeah, we are talking to the head of NPA. Does it mean that he's just joining up there, then he's not controlling those public prosecutors down there? They are doing as they like. Let's not allow this thing, Moss.
Honorable Kutongo, a point noted. I think we have pointed that out. Let him proceed. Thank you for
it. Thank you. And of course, I am briefed. I am briefed in high-profile matters. And if I'm made aware of particular matters, I call for briefings. So I would respect, you know, disagree that there's selective prosecution, but I'd be the first to concede that we can do more. We can do more, and we're striving to do more. And we're striving to do so by working closely with our stakeholders to bring matters to justice. With regards to the SCOPA report, I definitely will revisit the SCOPA report. I'll have a look at the hundred cases or so that are referred to in the SCOPA report. And I'm not in a position to comment on that today. The question on whether the statement was made that there's an impression that's been formed that there's a fragmented approach to the relationship between the Hawks and the DPCI, I mean the Hawks and the NPA. These matters are investigated under prosecutor-guided investigation methodology. And this places reciprocal responsibility on both the prosecuting teams and the investigating teams, and they're compelled to work together. And as Advocate Govender explained earlier on, the teams were working closely at all times. And it was not a matter of the prosecutor sitting back and investigators doing all the work. It was a joint initiative and efforts and endeavors by the investigating and the prosecuting teams. And that's part of the SECU methodology.
Thank you response. I'm listening intensively to the input. I think African Governor also sketched good cooperation, excellent cooperation. The teams are together. But with Abrams, if I analyze your presentation this morning, especially on the timelines in terms of the Stina project, if there that was the close cooperation, why was there additional information, financial reports asked at the end of the process and not during the process? Because that dispels, in effect, this close cooperation that you tested today.
Also, I don't think that the members are more interested in cooperation and things like that. They want to know why there's no action where even ordinary people in the public think that action should have been taken, especially against politicians or senior people. And that's what people want to know. And if we could hear that rather than debate close cooperation or non-cooperation.
I think with regards to the challenges that arose between the investigating and prosecuting teams, these are issues that ordinarily arise during the course of any investigation where people agree and or disagree as to what is required, when it is required, and ultimately how that is processed eventually and how it impacts on the administration of justice. I think the best people to comment on how those challenges came about and why there was no agreement, as you would have expected there would be agreement, would of course be the lead prosecutor and the lead investigator. They would be best placed to explain that, degree of inconsistency and how it came about. With regards to the issue of, and I'm not even looking at the questions now, I just want to respond directly to the issue raised by Mr. Mutsecha. Your question is, why have no politicians, been arrested or charged with respect of this matter? This is a matter that's still the subject of investigation. The matter has been postponed until August 2018. That does not mean that there will be no other arrests. The matter is still the subject of investigation. And to publicly say Mr. X or Ms. Y will be the subject of an arrest or an arrest warrant or will be charged with respect of this matter, I think it's inappropriate. Please, I implore on everybody, allow the investigative processes, to take place. It doesn't matter how anybody here or anybody out there or I feel about anybody. We need to treat people fairly. That's what the Constitution says. So the matter is still the subject of investigation, and if the investigation ultimately warrants that more people must be added as an accused person or be charged separately, then that process will take place.
That give us names of politicians to be accepted. We are saying the perceptions are that we are targeting junior people, subordinates, and nothing is being said or done about everybody. So it's for you to explain that investigations are going on and investigations affect everybody regardless of their standing in society. So we have to explain that so that society doesn't get the perception that there is selective prosecution. That's all we are saying.
Thank you, Chairperson. I accept that, and that's why I've made the submission that I have, that the matter is a subject of investigation, you know, if the investigations lead to other people having to be charged, then they will be charged. Nobody against whom there is a prima facie case and where the interest of justice dictates that a prosecution must be instituted will be let off the hook in respect of this matter. This is a discussion that we've had before with Advocate Governor and the prosecuting team, and I want to re-emphasize it here that nobody will escape justice in respect of this particular of this matter or any other matter. Thank you. Point of order, Chair. It was just a follow-up on this question, if I may. The with respect, and I accept that you can't go into detail, Advocate, but the explanation that you give, perhaps this is not only for you, it may well be for DPCI as well. If you look at the case under discussion, so your explanation in terms of selection of those that must be prosecuted at a category 1, if you like, and others will be category 2, are you suggesting that their crime activities was exclusive of those who are in the position of authority? Because, I mean, if you're investigating a meth house in a farm, you would have officials, you'll have also the non-officials who are in a position of authority who would have given a decision that this and X must be done. So what you don't explain is the fact that in that investigation, you have selected that you will deal with this group A, and you have left the group B for the later investigation. Because it's intertwined. That particular crime is intertwined activity. How do you manage to sift through that to isolate those who are junior and leave the seniors? It's not only your question, it's question also DPCI as well. That's just a follow-up, because my difficulty understanding this, it's an explanation that takes so long that does not even deal with the questions that you're asking.
It's a very fair follow-up. Both of you, can you address that these intertwined issues, how do you then create categories that you deal with category A, arrest category A, and then there will be arrest of category B? And
thank you. I'm pleased that you raised this question. Let me first say that there are many investigations in which one does draw that, that analogy of a category A, a category B, a category C, etc., etc. And as part of your prosecution strategy and your investigating strategy in dealing with a particular matter. This is not the case in this instance. In this instance, the people that have been charged, there were prima facie cases against them. Now, for us to charge any other person requires further evidence. Now, if there's no evidence, prima facie evidence, against particular individuals at this stage, and you directed further investigations, and that further investigation ultimately will decide whether persons must be charged or not. Have I answered your question?
The question is directed no. The answer is no.
That's the furthest I can take in respect to this particular matter. I regrettably cannot, go much further than what I have. Otherwise, I would be divulging critical information around this particular investigation that should not be divulged in public or in Parliament or elsewhere until such time the criminal justice process has run its course. Thanks.
A reference to a certain Manele who made an accusation that got instructions that certain politicians should not be arrested, and that you.
I've made notes of all the questions. You are the question related to a Mr. to Knox Molele at Asset Forfeiture Unit. Asset Forfeiture Unit does not have the powers to affect arrest. So I hope that answers the question. Thank you. There was a question about everybody put ice or everybody stopped. So-called stopped work in December 2018, or they put everything on hold, and of course it was followed up by, you know, did anybody wait until 20 December, you know, 2017? The work in this matter has always been ongoing. We obtained a preservation order long before the Christmas break. We obtained a preservation order of 1.6 billion in respect of the McKinsey matter. So if our work had stopped at the time, we would have, of course, not have proceeded, you know, with the preservation order. My understanding from, the Estina matter, for which we obtained a preservation order in January, was that a date was obtained during the second half of January. So to say anything else, I think, would be scurrilous under the circumstances. So the work still continued. As to the investigators and some prosecutors going on leave, that's something that that the lead investigator and the lead prosecutor will have to respond to. There was a question wanting to know what is still outstanding in respect of the Estina matter. I would respect, don't think it's proper, you know, for would-be suspects, or accused persons who have already appeared before court, or the public, for me to sit here in front of Parliament with a whole country is watching me, saying, listing what is outstanding in respect of, of the Estina investigation. It flies in the face of the proper administration of justice. And there's many, many court decisions where the court said it's undesirable for accused persons or anybody else to peep over the shoulders of investigating authorities during the course and process of investigation. Whether Advocate Govender had consulted with the Director of Public Prosecution in terms of Section 24.3, she will respond to that. There was a question about what informed the issuing of the warrant of arrest. I'm not sure if she's dealt with it, but she'll deal with it. She'll deal with it. Okay. Is it correct? There's a question directed to me whether I deliberately withheld on a particular matter. I did not withhold on any matter. In fact, my direction and instruction was clearly, you know, that these are matters that need to be dealt with as expeditiously as possible. I disagree with the statement that this was a bungled investigation and a delay by the NPA. I've I've addressed that issue earlier on. Questions that were asked, and I'm just trying to see which ones are relevant to me. There was a question around, is it incorrect for the NPA to utilize the provisions of Section 43 of the Criminal Procedure Act, which relates to arrest. You know, we've never intimated at any stage that it's our prerogative, you know, to issue directives for arrests to be effected. We accept that it's the legal and constitutional responsibility of the police to effect arrests in any given matters. But when you're working as a joint team and decisions are being taken and there's particular methodologies that are utilized, then the relationship is such where there's a consultative process and a concurrence process with regards to what has to transpire, when it has to transpire, etc. The reality is, whereas it's the police powers to effect arrest, it's the prosecution's prerogative as to what charges need to be preferred and whether those charges would actually stick or stand at the end of the day, or whether the evidence substantiates the charges that a particular person has been arrested for. I think all the matters that the EFF have complained about, I'd be very pleased if those matters can be brought to my attention and I can inquire from the relevant officers as to what has transpired in respect of these matters. I did not rush to charge Ms. Breitenbach nor Minister Godan. I did not make any of those decisions. That was a statement that was made earlier on. And I'm happy to go into the merits of these or into the whole decision. I don't think it's necessary for purposes of this engagement. Of course, we did submit letters of request for mutual legal assistance. The Director General of Justice is the central authority for the Republic of South Africa, through whom requests for mutual legal assistance are, of course, channeled through DIRCO, through the international process, to our foreign counterparts. So easy engagements with DIRCO. Of course, there's engagements with Justice, and I'm not sure if there has been engagements with the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, but ordinarily, you know, in big matters, there is engagements with our missions at the various countries, as well as with our foreign counterparts. There's direct engagements on these issues. And in this instance, there has been direct engagements with at least 7 prosecution services of the 8 countries to which requests for mutual legal assistance have been submitted. As to the timeline of the investigation, they've seen the matter's postponed until the middle of August, so the investigation has to be concluded way before then. And with regards to the investigation in the rest of the state of capture matters, of course, the lead prosecutor and the lead investigators are best to be able to give more clarity on that. We, of course, would like these matters to be investigated as speedily as possible. Direct statement was made to me that I delayed arrests. I did not delay any arrests. I don't make the decisions as to who should be arrested or who should not be arrested. This is part of the misinformation and narrative that's been put out there, which is completely incorrect. There's a statement about the NPA being politically captured. That is completely incorrect. Now, again, I just want to contextualize that, if I may. There are plus minus 22 to 23 presidential appointments. The national director, four deputy national directors, 11 directors of public prosecutions, and plus minus another five or six special directors of public prosecution. Now, most of the people, or the majority of prosecutors in the NPA, are career prosecutors. Now, for anybody to say that the NPA is politically captured, they'll have to be more specific and provide direct evidence and say so-and-so is captured and these are the reasons why and by whom. I think to say that the NPA as an institution is politically captured is, with respect, a completely irresponsible statement to make. There are hard-working prosecutors out there who make many sacrifices throughout their lives to deliver justice to the community. I personally was a career prosecutor who made many sacrifices. And there are many people like me in the institution that have given their lives to serve and provide the best criminal justice service to the citizens of this country. Address the issue around the question of November, December. The issue of the plundering of the land in KwaZulu-Natal, I'd be happy if those matters are brought to our attention to have a look at. We'll also look into the Glencore matter. Why did we not bring Knox Molele? We looked at the reasons as to why we should be here, and there was no need to bring him here. There's no sinister reason as to why he's not here. He cannot speak about asset forfeiture matters, prospective asset forfeiture matters, and the reason why we are here is directly as a result of what happened last week. The question around IPED, allegation of selective prosecutions, IPED had purportedly alluded to. IPED has submitted a number of matters to the NPA. In some instances, we've decided to prosecute. In other instances, we've decided to decline to prosecute. IPED has not been happy with matters in which we decided to decline to prosecute. The reality is, not because a matter is submitted to the NPA, does that mean automatically there must be a prosecution? It doesn't matter whether it's the police detectives, the local detectives, or the head office, whether it's the Hawks, whether it's IPED, whether it's crime intelligence. It doesn't matter who it is that submits a matter to the NPA. Investigators may genuinely believe there is a basis for a prosecution. And prosecutors perusing the matter may be of a different view that the evidence in that docket would not be sustainable to obtain a conviction. And of course, there are also instances where the interest of justice does not dictate that a prosecution should be pursued. So I think once again the perception that there is selective prosecution is completely incorrect. The issue of the operational committee, there are ongoing engagements between the Minister of Justice and the Minister of Police. Of course, there's now a new Minister of Police. And there's also been key discussions between the heads of various structures that fall under the administration of or area of responsibility of the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services, as well as the institutions under the or the units under the Minister of Police, where there have been critical discussions, as to joint initiatives to enhance service delivery in the fight against crime. This is one of the issues. This is one of the issues that I'm certain will be dealt with.
Our concern appears not to be action. What could be the stumbling block? We wanted to assist in the removal of the stumbling blocks. And bear denial are not going to assist us. And also, we cannot stop society from having perception. Society must have perception if we think that there is no movement going forward. But I don't know, Coach. I can't get the sense that we are not going anywhere.
So I think
Mr. Chair,
maybe also to get a view from the floor, we can look at the way forward. But it's going to be important listening to the input that maybe that the executive authority should be part of that discussion. But let's hear the members.
Thank you, Chairperson. I agree the route that we are taking is not bearing fruit for us, because the intention here was not to get into the operational issues either of NPA or DPCI. All we need to do is for them to have a good working relationship, and they have said they have that. And the perceptions that are there, whether correct or wrong, that's all we need to deal with that. Because otherwise, if the aim is not to tell you who to arrest and when, otherwise we will be doing the same thing that people perceive is happening. But all we need now is to get the assurance that some work is going to be done. And if there's some way in which we can get that assurance, I think all of us will be happy. because there's no way in which we can say go and arrest that one because he has got an ugly face or whatever. It's not up to us. As I said earlier on, we do oversight as the police over the hawks, and they account to us, and what they do, their performance measurement is the cases that they take to court. And if they don't do that, they need to account to us. And if your measurement as the NPA is something else, then you need to do something about that. Because it makes, you can sit with the dockets and your performance measurement is not affected as the NPA, because that wouldn't be your measurement, your performance measurement. And that needs to be corrected. Whilst the dockets are on your, whatever the reason might be, there's no action from the hawks. That is our main concern. And if you can sort out that, then I think we will be satisfied as the portfolio committee on police. So we are not throwing allegations. We are simply saying our side of the oversight is not performing, and we want to take that out so that they perform. And if that can be sorted out, we are happy. Either you are going to sit down, both institutions or agencies, and sort out what your performance, because your performance indicators are affecting the hawks' performance indicators. And it can't work that way, because according to us, they are not performing. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to honorable members, the leadership of NPA, Hawks, and everyone. Chair, I fully support what you've proposed. I'm of that view that we need the members of the executive, the ministers, responsible for this department, to attend. Because I also have that sense, Chairperson, that really it seems that we are not going to reach the gist of what we want to reach, as things are happening now. I therefore submit, Chairperson, that we really need them as responsible people on this department. You know, Chairperson, when these things comes out in the media there, it paints a very negative picture about the law enforcement agencies of our country. And it demands of us to really exercise our oversight role diligently and make sure that everyone who is accountable performs accordingly. It is for those reasons, Chairperson, that I support your submission that we need members of the executive so that we deal with these things once and for all with no doubts. Thank you.
No, Chair, I want to also agree. I mean, we still have to get the presentations as well, that the advocate's ambush presentation this morning. We need to get a copy of that, and we need to get the responses from the DPCI. And then, of course, we need to get through, because we will need to get some other information. For an example, Chair, the advocate says we want the DPCI, in terms of the Act, to delegate us responsibility to do the investigation. But the multitask team, it is not making headway. They have backwards and forward in terms of it. The advocate says a guided prosecutional thing. It's not multi-disciplinary team. We quite don't know what we're dealing with. A guided, multidisciplinary, which is integrated. Now, give us some powers in terms of the DPCI Act for us to do some of this investigation, then we will deliver. Now, I don't know if we can't deliver on the other, what will then be a magical to deliver exclusively when you are given the power. Maybe the minister will help us to understand some of those issues, because we are not getting answers. We're getting explanation, which put us in the same position we were when we arrived here. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Very strange calling you Chair, but thank you. To both Chairs, I agree with my colleagues here. I think the only way forward and the only way we can possibly start delving down to where we should be is to bring in the ministers and the former Minister of Police to answer to allegations that have been made. Let's clear that up once and for all. Get the answers to our questions. And I must say, at no stage has anyone in this room asked for details of any investigations. And yet we face great defensiveness in this regard, manufactured, I presume. So this entity as a whole has, according to what I've heard and I think we've all heard, has failed at this investigation thus far. We're now hearing even excuses about extraditions, number one, that shouldn't have to be taking place because they knew full well they were a flight risk, and of course they can be charged for anything. So really we need the people at the top to come and give us answers. So I absolutely concur.
Another view. I think that when we came here, we wanted to identify stumbling blocks, obstacles, and help to remove them so that the DPSI and NPA can go and ensure that there is action that is credible. And the only stumbling block that we have dealt with is that you are able to work together. We are happy with that. But still, the feeling is that we are not getting anywhere. And I think also it would be fair that we get a response to your presentation from Advocate Ramatagan, if you prepare that, and then we then approach the Minister of Justice, the former Minister of the Police, and the new Minister of the Police, ask them to appear before us together with yourselves, and hope that from the questions that you had, you can also refine some of the answers that you gave us, because we are not representing ourselves, we are representing society, and we may accuse society of having perceptions, but these perceptions may be as a result of the perceived lack of action. So I think that ourselves as members of parliament, we will be not doing our work if we don't work in such a way that unnecessary perceptions don't arise. We have to do our work in such a way that the society to which we account is satisfied that we are delivering, to borrow the words of Honorable Mahakeng, that society wants performance, wants us to perform, and therefore we also want to see performance from your side, and the only way to move forward without trying to ask you to step in your shoes. I think let's agree that we'll agree with my co-chair and the two committees that we'll get another date. We'll invite the two ministers, including the former minister of police, and then we'll take this process forward. Honorable Mlauzi and Honorable Songo, did you want to say something?
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I heard you were listing the number of the people to be invited to be maybe to be part of our meeting next time. I'm thinking also we must also ask Advocate Mulele also to come, and the regional LPA representative of Free State and of Gauteng, so that you can get a clarity, as you said, about the regional leader of LPA in Western Cape. How about the direct people?
Yeah, no, I wanted to make a recommendation on top of what my colleague has raised. Chairperson, with your respect, we know that here in Parliament, various committees looking into state capture have been formed, and serious matters have transpired there. If maybe comprehensive report can also be sourced from these committees, so that these structures can tell us, what are they doing? Or they just watch televisions and then say, hooray.
Must prepare, and in preparing we can source information from elsewhere. But I think for the purpose of now, we agree that we need a further meeting with yourselves and the other interested parties that we have agreed on.
I think one practical issue that maybe both entities can look at, and maybe not in more detail, but the issue of the coordinating committee. Because I think if that issue is dealt with comprehensively, a lot of the issues that's on the table today and occurred last year could have been averted. So I think that is quite important. Maybe the executive authority should also be requested that the necessary attention is given to the coordinating committee in terms of the SAPS Act. Thank you.
No, this meeting, but thank you very much. I think we may also have ambushed you because you may have thought that you have come to account in the normal way, but this was an exceptional meeting. Thank you very much. You are well excused.